WFMB New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
Here's my report card, Mom and Dad.
The report card your child brings home isn't the only one that counts. The school also has to meet certain standards. The No Child Left Behind law says if your child... you can transfer your child to another school. Find out how your child's school is doing. It's your child. It's your right. Call 1-800-USA-LEARN. A message from the U.S. Department of Education.
Here's the 2-1. Bring it on!
Hi, I'm Barry Bonds, the RAD, recording artist, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. In my league... Please, take your keys. Call a cab or drive them home yourself, because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Darius Rucker and the boys from Hootie and the Blowfish. We have an important message for you. If you're an adult, 21 or over, it's fine to have a drink while you're enjoying an evening with good friends. What's not right is overdoing it. When you drink too much, you're probably not quite as much fun as you think.
Yeah, if you do drink, please do it responsibly. If you go out with a group and there's going to be drinking, have a designated driver. Don't you think, Dino?
Mark is right.
A wounded American soldier was taken away in a stretcher from the burning Humvees. In other areas of Iraq, the coalition has given officials in Fallujah 2 more days for negotiations aimed at disarming insurgents there. U.S. troops will begin joint patrols of the city with Iraqi security forces today. The military has been preparing for an all-out assault on the city if a political solution cannot be found. A U.S. soldier was killed by a roadside bomb in Baghdad yesterday, and at least 2 civilians were killed in shooting afterwards. Seaborne assailants attacked Iraq's 2 offshore oil terminals during the weekend, temporarily shutting off much of the country's exports. And political pundits continue to examine President Bush's apparent success to maintain huge support for the U.S. occupation in Iraq. This in spite of the escalating American death toll and the cost of the war. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Here's my report card, Mom and Dad.
The report card your child brings home isn't the only one that counts. The school also has to meet certain standards. The No Child Left Behind law says if your child's school isn't meeting academic goals, you can transfer your child to another school or get free tutoring and other extra help. Now you can find out how your child's school is doing. It's your child. It's your right. Call 1-800-USA-LEARN. A message from the U.S. Department of Education.
Here's the 2-1. Bring it on!
Hi, I'm Barry Bonds, the RAD, recording artist, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. In my league, we hit home runs without a designated hitter. But if you want to get home safe, there should always be a designated driver. So when you're with someone who is drinking, please take their keys. Call a cab or drive them home yourself, because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
There was a pledge of support for the rebuilding of some of the world's most troubled regions over the weekend. Members of the group of 7 major industrial countries have promised to fuel economic support for the rebuilding of war-torn Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestinian areas of the West Bank, and Gaza. The pledge was contained in a joint statement that surfaced during a meeting of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. U.S. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York says the nation has to get real about the future of its children. New York Democrat accuses the Bush administration of walking away from the goals set by the Supreme Court's Brown versus the Board of Education decision. The 1954 ruling determined that separate but equal schools for white and black students were unfair and unconstitutional. She says President Bush has failed to fund his No Child Left Behind Act so schools can actually meet its requirements. Clinton was the keynote speaker at Detroit's NAACP dinner, which wrapped up the 3rd annual Freedom Weekend. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Hey, this is Darius Rucker and the boys from Hootie and the Blowfish. We have an important message for you. If you're an adult, 21 or over, it's fine to have a drink while you're enjoying an evening with good friends. What's not right is overdoing it. When you drink too much, you're probably not quite as much fun as you think.
Yeah, if you do drink, please do it responsibly. If you go out with a group and there's going to be drinking, have a designated driver. Don't you think, Dino?
Mark is right. The good news is that the most recent statistics show that underage drinking is declining. They also show the lowest levels of traffic deaths involving alcohol since they started keeping track.
But we can all do more, Dean. It's Sony, asking you to remember that we all need to do our part by drinking responsibly and keep things going in the right direction.
This message is brought to you by the members of the National Beer Wholesalers Association, committed to encouraging responsible consumption of its products.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down. But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd President of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax Bush once and for all.
Planet Check. Eco victory for Yellowstone Park. Federal Judge Emmett Sullivan says no go to snowmobiles.
The judge determined that the ruling of the Bush administration was in violation of the intent of the Organic Act of the National Parks. The levels of snowmobiles in either case were outrageously high, given the mandate to protect Yellowstone irreparably for future generations.
That's Alfred Runty, author of National Parks, The American Experience.
The big environmental hazard has been to the wildlife and to the quality of the air. But there's a more fundamental issue, and that is, why have snowmobiles in the national parks in the first place? We're supposed to go there and enjoy nature.
The court ruling marks the beginning of a phase-out of snowmobiles in Yellowstone.
Snowmobiles are cut back in half for this year, from 900 to 460-some machines. Next year, there will be a total elimination of snowmobiles.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, we've got the Presidential Day Planner on tap, plus Sue will tell us all about going to the rally in D.C. yesterday. You were there for, what, an hour or so, you said?
The very important hour, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big hour. It was the decisive hour.
Yeah,
of the rally.
Lots of shouting. My voice made a difference.
Yeah, I think I heard it on some of the newscasts. I was in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Friday night. I flew out there, and I was out there. You know, I just wonder, at what point in my career am I going to get to a gig? You know, where, like, I get to this gig, Riley. I mean, I show up, and it looked like an elementary school auditorium. It was at the Hillel House in Minneapolis. There was, like, a little stage. There were some folding chairs set up. And there was a mic plugged into a guitar amp. When does that part of my career end?
It was a mic plugged into
a guitar amp, and all I could think was, like, oh, no. How could this be good? Oh, really? And Can you hear them?
I can hear me now.
Oh, good. Okay. So Riley's in.
Sue, can you hear you?
Yeah, we can't hear Sue yet.
We can't hear Sue.
Sue will be here in a moment. Oh, you know, it's always exciting here in the morning. So anyway, so I get to Minneapolis. This kid, Jeremy, picks me up at the airport. He drives me to this gig, right? And I get to that point where I'm like, yeah, is there a place where I can check my my email, like a Kinko's or something? He's like, no, I don't know. So then I go to this kid's dorm room, or his little off-campus apartment, to check my email. And I'm like, wow, I have really made it. I have arrived.
Now, what school was this again?
This was the University of Minneapolis, Hillel. It was the Hillel.
You mean University of Minnesota Hillel.
University of Minnesota Hillel. Exactly.
He doesn't care as long as he gets the check.
There, Sue.
Yeah, right?
No, I do care. You know, but let me just say this. It was a great show. The place packed out. People came from off campus, on campus. They publicized it really well.
Oh,
I did like an hour and a half. You know, I did, and I was told to not censor myself. So this kid Jeremy was ecstatic. The rabbi was not that happy. The rabbi came up to me afterward and said, "You know, it was a good show. It was not the show I would have done."
But yeah.
And I talked about everything. I talked about sex. I talked about Uday and Kusay and Saddam Hussein and about the American troops and the environment. And everything else. The only thing this rabbi had a problem with. She came up to me, and she looks like she should be a rabbi. You know how some people look like they should be nuns? She looked like she should be a rabbi in the same way. And she came up to me and said, I really had a...
What is that look?
Oh, you know what that look is. She was real nice. And she goes, I had a problem with a suicide joke.
Oh, wow.
And I do this joke, like, which is like, you know, I think about suicide all the time. You know, it's not that I'm going to kill myself. I just find it relaxing, you know, to know that I can if I have to. You know, you ever had that moment where you're just like, why does my life have to? Hey, I could always kill myself. You know, there's a relief in it. It's a spiritual reprieve of the faithless is what I say. And she thought it was bad for me to condone suicide to college students. And I said, how could you have misunderstood that joke? And then I had to think about it because I'm a guilt-ridden Jew bastard. I'm like, am I asking people to kill them? No, I'm relieving the tension of those type of thoughts. So that was my, and then, you know, I was, I'm going to end up talking to
you. No, but you did an hour though, right?
Hour and a half. It was great. And they had a great time. And it was the first time that I ever landed at Chicago Midland Airport, which has one of the best food courts of any airport that I've ever been, that I've ever been to. I mean, if I was actually in Chicago, I'd maybe even go out there just to eat.
Really?
The airport to Midland, yeah.
You have to tell us about that the next hour.
Yeah, right.
That's some fascinating.
Yeah, isn't it fascinating, man? What a big weekend. No. Then I came home and I bought food for my week. Big weekend.
For the entire week you bought everything?
Yeah, I did.
That's good.
He went into his local store and said, give me whatever they have at the Midland Food Court.
Yeah, right?
Is it Chicago Midway?
Yeah, it is. It's Midway. It's Midway
here. God, we got to pull it together here this
Midland
morning.
Midland is Bush in Texas. That would be even yummier, I'm sure.
No, it was just like one of those ones where it was pretty organized. It was like a mall. I spent 3 hours there. I love watching people at airports. It's like raw people. You know, it's like people completely disjointed from wherever they come from or whatever their life is. Yeah. And you just sort of see them for what they really are.
People in an airport.
Yeah, just walking around in a daze, wondering whether or not to have Ben and Jerry's.
Doesn't it make you feel well-dressed?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I hadn't thought about that, but I guess I was pretty well-dressed for a guy in
the
airport.
You have a pretty country look this morning. You know?
Yeah, I'm wearing my Merle Haggard shirt, my country rock shirt, Flying Burrito Brothers tribute shirt.
We've got some late developments coming out of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard in the newscast that was finished a little while ago. There's been an explosion in northern Baghdad. So far, only one American soldier was taken away in a stretcher. There was a series of Humvees. Four Humvees got set on fire. And, you know, this ties into another story that's ongoing, which is the whole issue of the Humvees themselves and how safe they are. Newsweek has done a study that says that one in four American casualties might not have happened had the Humvees had stronger armor, because apparently they're not armed. There's no armor around.
So they're ill-prepared over there? They picked the wrong vehicle for the troops to use?
They picked the wrong – they too lightly armored the vehicles, apparently, because most of the casualties are happening with, you know, roadside bombs, kind of improvised sorts of violence.
Right.
And the study apparently says that had these Humvees been better armed, fewer Americans would have been killed and wounded.
So isn't Bush the give them whatever they need president? I mean, is he going to get on this or what?
He needs to get on. I don't know if he's – is he to give them
yeah, the troops can have whatever they need to do this right.
That's what he said in his news conference the week before last.
Well,
maybe they just figure the Humvees are safe enough for Arnold Schwarzenegger to be driving around the freeway in Santa Monica.
Maybe it's the wrong kind of Humvees. They accidentally sent the recreational type over there.
They need to do something.
The ones with the six CD interchanger
exactly.
in the trunk.
And the little TV for the kids.
But, you know, the problem is apparently these Humvees are targets all over the place. I mean, we keep hearing about Humvees being attacked. This is now the second attack on Humvees in 2 days.
But it's not surprising because everybody has, you know, there's a growing fear that the Americans have been, you know, too violent, resorted to, you know, too much violence to try and clamp down on what's been happening in Fallujah and Najaf. And so they're big. These things, they're natural targets.
Yeah, they certainly are. They're something that people can, again...
They're natural targets here, too. You know, I think a lot of them are getting stolen.
With their gas mileage, sometimes they ought to be. But, you know, the Marines, when you talk about Najaf and Fallujah, they've decided now to delay a planned offensive in Fallujah. It's supposed to be now not being done until tomorrow. Instead of storming the city, U.S. military officials have decided to conduct patrols alongside Iraqi security forces. The Bush administration has signed off on this new strategy, according to reports, and it's aimed at trying to avert military action that could galvanize the Arab world and the Iraqis against the occupation, as if that's not a problem already. So at this point, they're also taking a similar tack in Najaf, which, of course, is the headquarters of Muqtada al-Sadr, the Shiite cleric, who has, you know, they keep saying he's got an illegal militia. I don't know how the United States determines what's legal and what's illegal, but I guess, you know, he who conquers is the one that's in charge. And now U.S. military commanders say there's no timeline for a military incursion on Najaf either. Again, apparently trying to keep criticism of the military's actions. Sue, this is something that you had talked about at the end of last week, the fact that the U.S. military is seen sometimes being overbearing and trigger-happy.
Absolutely. I mean, that's very much how the Europeans felt. I think it's good that they've decided that they will try and give diplomacy and some kind of mediation with Iraqi leaders a chance before they go in with a full-on offensive. I was really worried over the weekend. Every time I looked at a paper, there were U.S. military leaders saying, you know, well, our patience is running out. We're going to have to go in soon. But I do think it's a bit of a concern, the idea that they're going to go and have these foot patrols. They're going to go out, the U.S. Marines are going to go out on U.S. forces on patrol with the Iraqis.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like taking human shields. I think that the view is that they're not going to shoot at us if we're with an Iraqi.
Yeah, and it's like, stay in the Jeep, fellas. Just stay in the Jeep. We just need you to look like you're with us.
Well, they've said, you know, we won't fire until we're fired on.
Scary scenario.
Coming up, we're going to have the Presidential Day Planner right here on Air America.
Air America Radio.
Relax.
There's no rush.
Planet check.
Clear skies, healthy forests. Don't believe the hype.
Clear skies. They use rhetoric that resonates with people, but the reality of their environmental programs is dirty air, dirty water.
That's Carol Browner, former EPA administrator under Clinton.
The current administration has been very successful in dressing up and thinning their terrible record on the environment. Environment 2004 is a group of committed environmentalists who want to make sure that voters across the country, swing voters, know exactly what the Bush administration is doing in terms of clean air, clean water, how they are failing to enforce our environmental laws.
Environment 2004's mission? Educate voters on the facts and emphasize the critical importance of this presidential election.
Please visit our website, environment2004.org.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Welcome to Tape 5, The Backpack. Let's say your child comes home from high school. They did something good. It's time to give them the backpack. Now you try the backpack. That's it. And pat, pat, pat.
It's really not that difficult. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Planet. I never thought about the problems of this planet at all.
That's Fat Mike from the punk band NoFX and PunkVoter.com.
Well, PunkVoter.com is the organization we started after the 2000 presidential election, and we've been building it for almost 4 years now. We've got a couple hundred bands that all are taking a stand.
Billy Joe from Green Day, The Offspring, and Jane Wheeland from The Go-Go's have also jumped on the bandwagon.
No Doubt have just joined up with us, and the Foo Fighters. What George Bush doing? He's dismantling 30 years of environmental law. He's a scary man. He's not a compassionate conservative. He's a religious fundamentalist.
Check out www.punkvoter.com for news items and t-shirts for sale.
The more money we get, the more advertisement we're doing, and the more bands we can get on the road to educate the kids of America on what's going on.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to tatmail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. Tatmail.com, helping people and the planet. And the planet.
Hey everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving.
What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Unfiltered.
Who doesn't believe that being in a relationship is indeed work? It should have protected rights. I think I found a way around the whole gay union.
But who do we negotiate with? Who do we do collective
each
bargaining with?
Each other.
Liz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
Oh, God.
That's what a relationship is, Rachel. I can't believe yours has lasted 5 years not knowing this. Oops.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
It's 20 past the hour, and it's time for our exclusive look into President Bush's day planner for Monday, April 26th. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. If you're just joining us, good morning. Yeah, it's been sort of a slow.
Good morning.
It's been sort
Hello.
Of a slow start here.
Thank you, Jack.
Rich is joining us this morning.
I know. All right, presidential day book for 4/26. That's today, right?
Yes.
Okay. 8 a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. Abortion marches help bad people. 8:40 a.m. Lie in bed for Pop-Tarts and Thomas the Tank Engine. 9 a.m. Consult advisors on trade for fantasy baseball. 2:15 p.m. Meet with Drug Czar. Compare prices. 3 p.m. Go to Minnesota. Talk about environmental benefits of hydrogen cars. Then call oil friends immediately afterwards. Assure them this will happen exactly 1 year after a pig wins the Kentucky Derby. Kentucky Derby. Oh, man.
That's a new one for Bird.
Yeah. Okay. That was good, Sue. Clever.
Thank you, darling.
4:30 p.m. Phoners solicit campaign contributions from recent widows.
Whoa.
5 to 6 p.m. Counterterrorism meeting and or nap as needed. 6:30 p.m. Wash up for dinner. SpaghettiOs night.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. 2:30-ish. Invoke executive privilege. Visit and feed captured extraterrestrials. That's a big day for the prez, I'll say.
Now, wait a minute. I got to ask you. Is he actually going to Minnesota?
I imagine he is. Yeah.
He is going to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
We just
missed at the
each
same
other.
Place.
I was about to say. He's going out to Hillel.
Minnesota Hillel, yeah. I was sad that Jack Rice, our CIA ex-case officer, who said he was going to meet me at the airport with a, you know, CIA escort, did not show up.
He was there.
Yeah.
He was there. That's how they work. You don't see them, but they see you.
He's probably following me and that kid Jeremy looking all over the parking lot for this kid's car. I can't, you know, there's just moments in my career where I go, like, it will change, right? Eventually this, I mean, I know I've been doing this 20 years, but it's going to, pretty soon someone will pick me up, right?
But now that you're headlining for George Bush, I'd say things are looking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a day early, but.
It's okay. You have the advance party.
I'd love to see him in a room that small. I guess that's about the same size as where he does a press conference. It turned out to be a great show. The kids were all, you know, shocked into it, you know, hysteria. It was good.
Yeah. Well, I spent part of my weekend on the Mall in Washington, D.C. It was my brother's 40th birthday, and I managed to take him and his wife to the pro-abortion choice rally. Could you imagine?
Pro-choice.
Whatever you call it.
Yeah.
It's very confusing, isn't it? You can't call it pro-abortion. That's the whole point. It has to be pro-choice.
Yeah, well,
even people who think you should have abortion, no one is really, really pro-abortion. It's not the fun thing you decide you're going to do.
No one wants an abortion.
No.
They would like to have the choice to get one if they need to.
But that was what was interesting about the rally. It's the biggest rally for abortion rights for the last 12 years. Mm-hmm. And they estimate there were about 750,000 people down there. And what was interesting, although it was very partisan, there were many, many signs for Kerry. It was very reasonable and very young and very very international compared with the one back in 1992, which happened 6 months before Clinton got elected. And that
was
the time.
That one?
Yeah, I was at that one too. People were really angry then because it was at the time where abortion clinics were being picketed and targeted, and there was a lot of violence
doctors
towards doctors. Absolutely. But what was interesting here is that I think about a third of the women who were there were probably in their 20s or younger. Hmm. And there were significant groups that had come from other countries who were very angry at one of the ways that the Bush administration has kind of rolled back availability to abortion has been with some tags on its foreign aid saying that no foreign aid can go to countries without any kind of family planning.
That's slipped under the radar, I think, to a large extent. I'm not sure how many Americans really know that now you can, countries that promote abortion can, or actually even promote, in some cases, contraception
absolutely.
Can get federal funding from the United States.
That's unbelievable, considering the amount of diseases that are spread and the amount of population.
Well, and the amount of poverty. The amount of poverty in third world countries and you know, where women don't get jobs, can't get jobs. But I think that, that the point that you make, Mark, right, that was what was good about the rallies. I feel that perhaps this will actually put things kind of out there in the public domain, and it could be a very good way of galvanizing young people for this election. I do see that, you know, in a year where we're not talking about kind of Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid issues that many young people don't feel address them, that this is one of the ways that, you know, young women and men could feel very motivated.
Well, you know, if you want to put something out in the public eye, I'm going to talk about something that I've seen that I haven't really thought about talking about with regard to this. And that is, I've spent some time recently at a place that's next door to an abortion clinic. And I got to say, men, y'all need to step up better than you do.
Okay. So you mean you're just seeing guys picking up their girls
as opposed to going in? Essentially abandoning their girls at the door. I've seen women in absolute tears, absolutely hysterical, and the guys walk away like they don't know these people.
I lived next to one in Boston years ago, and I still have a profoundly disturbing memory of something that happened outside of the abortion. But there was always this priest who had the pictures, you know, of the mutilated, you know, 3-month-old fetuses, you know, the ones that were already born that they, you know. But I saw a couple come out, and she, the woman just looked really sort of, you know, pale and shocked from the horrendous experience. And she just sort of, you know, buckled over and started, puking in the street. And I just remember it as being like just the most, you know, profoundly, you know, sort of disturbing and horrifyingly intimate moment that I witnessed coming out of that place.
And you would think that, you know, if people had been together long enough to conceive a child, that they might have some kind of relationship where the guy would show a little bit more empathy.
Well, you might, but I think the point is that many people haven't been together that long. That's why it's a crisis, and that's why an abortion is something that people are considering.
Yeah.
So you're saying that
it's not the
time to sort of come together, and it's not always. The intimacy isn't there for them to feel like they can rely on the person that...
And I mean, if it weren't for the fact that I see these women literally in hysterics about this, you would think that there would be a little bit more support.
There were a number of, lots of families down on the mall, actually, and men. I can't say I saw men's groups, you know, men pro-choice, but
the promise
people
keepers
were there.
Weren't there.
There were, you know, girlfriends, boyfriends marching together. There were, you know, fathers with their children. I was wondering how you would explain, you know, taking a 5- and 6-year-old along, you know, why, how you were marching.
This is for women to be protected.
That was quite heartening, I think. I mean, anything that can kind of get out there into the public that the state legislators, you know, since 1995 have enacted hundreds, you know, almost... I think it's 450 laws or something that restrict access to abortion by imposing waiting periods, by saying that teenage girls have to tell their parents. All the little ways they found of kind of chipping away, kind of easy accessibility to abortion. I think you're right that lots of things have slipped beneath the radar screen. And this, I hope that this march will be a way of kind of getting it out there. I think because it didn't seem really strident, it didn't seem kind of really angry in a way that was unpleasant. I mean, clearly people are angry that they think that abortion rights are being rolled back. But I think that the pro-choice groups have been kind of, you know, very skillful at sort of trying to make what the access to abortion reasonable. I was very struck by one group that had signs saying health, dignity, justice. I think trying to kind of you know, stake out the center here that you might not like or love the idea of abortions, but you think that the government should not be, the, you know, should not decide for us, that women should decide for themselves.
No,
I think that's a far better way of going. No, there were some kind of radical protest. There was one, you know, guy along the road who was heading out a sign, you know, yelling about how abortion was the same as the Holocaust. And you were like, keep it believable.
Did he have, like, a lot of them have props and whatnot?
There were lots of signs. Actually, my favorite sign, was U.S. out of my uterus was my favorite sign.
That's a good one. Yeah, I've heard that. I saw that one back in 92 as well. It's just like the long-term effect of these laws being, you know, taken away, of them, you know, making abortions more difficult, is that they'll, you know, women will no longer have control over their own lives.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, as if we do.
We'll be back with the Dream Diary and other things here on Air America, but now we have the headlines on Half Hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. More violence in Iraq with a bombing this morning in Baghdad of what most witnesses say was a perfume factory. Four American military Humvees were blown to bits in a blast when U.S. soldier was seen being carried out in a stretcher. Some may call it the Million Women March. Thousands of women from around the U.S. and some 57 countries converged in the Washington National Mall yesterday. This is to show support of abortion rights and to protest the Bush administration's policies on women's health worldwide. 1,400 groups sponsored the event yesterday in the Capitol. Both the House and Senate will be taking up measures this week that will affect your money. Senate considers a permanent extension of the ban on internet taxes. House Republicans, meanwhile, want to make permanent the Bush administration's tax cut. And Syria's ambassador to the U.S., Imad Mustafa, says Washington is full of conflicting messages these days. Mustafa, commenting on a recent letter from State Secretary Colin Powell, says, first they discuss imposing sanctions on us, then they ask us to help stabilize and pacify Iraq. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Planet. Canada leaves coal behind with green future in mind.
Coal is a very dirty 19th century fuel which has no place in 21st century North America.
That's Jack Gibbons, chair of the Ontario Clean Air Alliance.
The five coal-fired power plants we have in Ontario are a major contributor to our air pollution public health crisis. They produce as much pollution as 6.2 million cars.
Coal is environmental enemy number one.
Coal produces greenhouse gases that contribute to global warming and climate change. It produces mercury, which is a very potent nerve toxin that causes brain, liver, and kidney damage. It produces all kinds of smog and acid rain.
The good news, thanks to Ontario's new government, all dirty coal-fired power plants will be phased out by 2007.
Our goal is to clean up the air, to save lives and protect the environment, and to help stop global warming and climate change.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to tatmail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. Tatmail.com, helping people and the planet.
Yes, good morning. This is Mark Maron with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Those headlines woke up Mark Maron.
Oh, my God, I'm awake. Thank you for the coffee IV unit. Everyone's sitting here with their coffee drips that should last 3 hours. The Starbucks drip, available now. Right now, our Salon.com story of the day is a look at one of the men who's come forward to question John Kerry's war record. Who is this guy, and where did he come from? That's what Salon's Joe Connison wanted to find out, and he joins us now by phone. Joe, how are you?
Good morning.
Are you feeling awake?
I'm awake.
There you go.
Just about.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us who John E. O'Neill is, and what's he got the beef with Kerry about?
John E. O'Neill is a veteran. He's one of a bunch of veterans. He's probably the most... the best-known one who's come forward to question Kerry's war record. I mean, he went on... People who watch a lot of TV have probably seen him already. He was on CNN last week talking about his opinion that John Kerry is not a war hero. John Kerry is somebody that O'Neill has been attacking for a long, long time.
Yeah, where did he come from, O'Neill? What's his history? He didn't just come out of nowhere.
No, he's... The other thing that's up on the web now is a 1971 tape of the Dick Cavett Show.
Right, saw that,
As old as me will actually remember. When John O'Neill was a young Navy veteran, he and Kerry both actually had the same job in Vietnam, commanding a swift boat in the Mekong Delta.
Mm-hmm.
And He, in fact, even was on the same boat after Kerry left.
So maybe that's why he's mad. Kerry left the boat in bad shape.
That's right. Kerry left the boat and got the medals.
Yeah, right, right.
I don't know whether he did or not. But he was found, he was sort of discovered by the Nixon White House. And mm-hmm. Chuck Colson, who was Nixon's dirty trickster and actually went to prison for a while in Watergate, became very enamored of John O'Neill and brought him to meet President Nixon. And they sort of programmed him to be their anti-Kerry when Kerry was a leader in the anti-war movement.
So this goes back that 30
goes
years?
Back he's 33 years.
A Republican pawn that
right.
starting in 72 or something?
Right. So he, 71. And so he kind of disappears after that, John O'Neill, and now has popped up again this year as a Kerry critic and a veteran who resents Kerry's prominence and thinks he's not fit to be president and so forth. And he has... he's presented himself as a nonpartisan, just a veteran who's unhappy. So looking into his background, I very quickly found out that he's not exactly a nonpartisan figure. He is from an oil law firm in Houston, Texas. That's where he lives, and called Clements O'Neill Pierce Wilson and Fulkerson. And the interesting thing is that Wilson in that firm is a woman named Margaret Wilson, this guy's law partner, who was President Bush's counsel in the late 90s when he was governor of Texas. She's
wow.
one of the main partners. It's a very small firm. They are only 10 or 12 partners altogether.
So they were waiting to call this guy in.
Well, it kind of sounds that way. The other partner, a guy who passed away last January, is a guy named Tex Lazar, who is a very well-known right-wing activist in Texas, who was... Bush's running mate when he first ran for governor. So two of the partners.
He'll probably find a way of speaking as well.
Yeah. So they'll bring him back.
Somehow.
No, it's actually very, very sad. But anyway, he's two of the partners of Johnny O'Neill are major Republican activists in Texas. And Margaret Wilson, his partner, was the deputy counsel of the Commerce Department until the middle of 2002 when she went back to Texas. So this guy's pretty well socked in
right.
with the Texas Republican Party and the Bush machine down there.
Joe, are these attacks sticking to Kerry in your judgment? Specifically the ones from O'Neill. They're coming from other places, but are O'Neill's getting some currency?
Well, I have to think, Mark, that he's gotten a lot of airtime in some pretty important places. He was interviewed by Wolf Blitzer of CNN, who apparently didn't know any of this stuff, and that has to give him some traction somewhere. I mean, you hear a guy get up and start to denigrate a candidate, and he's presented as an impartial, American patriot who doesn't like John Kerry. I think that would give him some traction. I think, in general, the anti, Kerry attack that's based on his Vietnam record probably won't work very well. I think the Republicans may even have regretted bringing all this up last week when he finally, he released his war records and they turned out to be, as the Republicans later said, too good to be true. They were like, there's nothing bad in this record. In fact, they all say he was an outstanding officer. And I think that they may have regretted bringing that up.
Joe, isn't this partly a problem of the media just not doing its job properly? I mean, we can understand, Republicans trotting out a partisan spokesperson because that's just what they're bound to do in an election year. But shouldn't CNN do its job properly on seeing the track record or where a guest is coming from and challenging on that? I mean, anybody who's speaking out, they can't be nonpartisan.
I would think that it's worth asking the guy a question, like, do you have any connection to the Bush? He came up with an answer to that, which was, I've not been contacted by the Bush campaign.
What does that mean?
He was reactivated. The chip in his head that was put in there by Nixon.
Yeah, right. Did you need to be contacted by the Bush campaign? Or you just, did they send a radio wave? I mean,
Exactly.
But
this is all part of this, massive onslaught of people in the Republican camp speaking about his war record. I mean, I saw, what's her name, Karen Hughes on TV the other night.
She went after him, too.
God, these people are just evil. And what's up with Blitzer?
Well, Karen Hughes is it's amazing that Karen Hughes would say anything about Kerry's war record because she was the person who actually wrote Bush's quote-unquote autobiography in 1999 called A Charge to Keep, in which he lied about his war record.
But she was very careful, though. She didn't actually challenge him. She said it merits looking into. I mean, she's the kind of softly
attacked. What merits looking into is why she and Bush really purposely falsified his war record in that book. When Bush says, I kept flying with my comrades in the, you know, what he didn't call it, the Champagne Unit, but the Texas Air National Guard, for several years. And that was just, that's completely false.
Isn't there a question about his inability to take a physical because of, you know, possible sobriety issues?
The Times of London, the Rupert Murdoch newspaper in London, one of the Murdoch newspapers, raised that issue in 2000. There's actually quite an interesting story there when all this was first uncovered and then covered up again.
I just don't understand where these guys get off judging anybody's war record, given that none of them have one.
Well, very few. The only one who does is Powell, and of course he never talks about this kind of thing. So, and that's the way it is. Most of the soldiers who served, unless they're very partisan like this guy O'Neill, are very unlikely to question anybody else's medals or credentials.
He's clearly on the payroll on some level, at least, you know, metaphorically or ideologically.
I mean, look, the clients of his law firm are companies like ExxonMobil and General Electric and Koch Industries, which is run by a very right-wing, big-time Republican contributor, and Reliant Energy, which is, you know, kind of next door to Enron. So,
what do we do? How do the Democrats respond? What do we do, Joe?
I just think the issue is to find out what the truth is and tell people, figure out a way to tell them. I mean, this is, I guess it's what Air America is really about, is to have a place where people can go and find out what really is going on and what the truth is.
Okay.
That's right? You're doing it.
Yeah, we're trying to get it out there. Thanks
early
a lot.
In the morning.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you.
It's great talking to you. Joe Connison from Salon.com. Read the whole article on John E. O'Neill.
That's not today, right?
Yeah. I read about it a couple of days ago about this guy. I don't even know what's up with Blitzer. I'm starting to suspect Wolf Blitzer or something.
Filling product. I mean, I know. It's just that the media does not do a good job.
But why did they just
24 hours a day on your television to fill up, and they'll bring anybody on, and it sounds a little bit controversial. And
I think you're right.
They don't ask the right questions.
They never ask the questions.
I mean, you don't even have to say... did the what did Joe say that Wolf Blitzer should have asked him? You know,
what connections did he have to the Bush people?
He said that's what you should have asked him.
Right.
What connections? And Joe said, oh, we should ask him. You know, did you have a connection? Which you can easily dodge with a yes, no. I mean, you have to kind of go, and that has to be the first question that you ask someone like this. They're on national and international television on CNN.
But you know, they have the
it's
research.
It's irresponsible.
I mean, if we could get it, I'm sure that Wolf could get it too. And I just think that a lot of times they're just giving certain people a platform.
They have to
speak.
Otherwise, why would you come out and say anything at all unless you were a partisan in some way? Otherwise, why wouldn't you just be out mowing your lawn and having breakfast with your family on Saturday or Sunday? Why is there any need to go
Blitzer,
on CNN and say anything?
You think Blitzer's partisan?
I think that the media wants... They want stories. They want to spark something. And I think that
they don't care what it is.
They just want somebody new, somebody different.
Mm-hmm.
And look, it's on CNN. Now it makes a Salon column. And it's for people to decide. I hope that by putting it out here on Air America Radio, people can decide whether they think this guy has anything legitimate to say or not. But
Joe has a long history of going behind news stories like this and you know, doing the research and digging out these kinds of things.
Oh, I'm not criticizing Joe.
I think
CNN is the problem.
I know, no, absolutely. But for people who don't know Joe beyond Salon.com, because he wrote here for the Village Voice in New York, and this has been his history.
He's great. And for those of you who don't know Joe, Joe was perky this morning. Joe was on top of it, man. He was laughing. He was up. He'd had his coffee. It was great to talk to him.
We're sending him coffee now, aren't we?
Didn't he sound? Yeah. He sounded kind of perky, man.
We're delivering kind of medium lattes to him before air.
All right. I'm about to open my dream diary up, and we want to know whether you think Bush's trashing of Kerry's war record will stick. So we're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. We'll put you on the line right here on Air America.
America Radio. All the right people hope we'll fail. Planet Check.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artist Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
You know, it's time now in the world where music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. And it's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution. Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at www.wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Do nasal allergies hit you where it hurts most? Your wallet?
Yeah.
Then ask your doctor about Flonase, fluticasone propionate nasal spray, 50 micrograms. Flonase has the lowest average copay of any leading prescription nasal allergy brand in the nation. And now you could save up to $60 a year through the Allergy Rewards Program. Call 1-800-FLONASE or visit Flonase.com to learn more. Only Flonase is approved to treat nasal symptoms from indoor and outdoor allergies, as well as year-round non-allergic nasal symptoms that can feel like allergies. All prescription products are not approved to treat the same symptoms. Only your doctor can decide what treatment option is best for you. For best results, use daily. Maximum relief may take several days and results may vary. Side effects are generally mild and may include headache, nosebleed, or sore throat. See our ad in Fitness Magazine. Call 1-800-FLONASE or ask your doctor or pharmacist about the medicine that's tough on nasal allergies. Easy on your wallet. All it takes is FLONASE. Allergy Rewards Program subject to eligibility.
Breast cancer. Words that can provoke despair. But since 1993, a dedicated group founded by Evelyn Lauder has been working to make certain no one ever has to hear those words again. Hello, I'm Kate Burton. The Breast Cancer Research Foundation, now in its 10th anniversary year, is proud to have raised more than $70 million. This year, 87 cents of every dollar you donate to the foundation will go directly to breast cancer research and awareness programs. In the U.S. alone, nearly 40,000 women and men die from breast cancer each year. You can do something powerful. Your support will help us achieve prevention and cure. Let's give breast cancer the punch it deserves and knock it out for good. For more information, call toll-free 1-866-FIND-A-CURE or visit www.bcrfcure.org. That's 1-866-FIND-A-CURE or bcrfcure.org. Thank you.
The O'Franken Factor.
This week on the O'Franken Factor CSI, we'll continue our autopsy of the Bush administration with guest forensic analysts Molly Ivins, Jamie Rubin, and Howard Fineman. Don't turn your ears away. It's gruesome, but gripping. Weekdays at noon in the East, 9 in the West. O'Franken.
Al Franken and Catherine Lanfer. Weekdays noon to 3 on Air America Radio.
It is now 47 past the hour, and we're taking your calls on Terry's war record at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. We've also got emails. Please send to sedition@airamericaradio.com. We just got an email. After all the things we've been talking about, abortion marches, John Kerry's war record.
Iraq.
Here we go. Here's the email. Mark Maron is correct. In fact, the sandwiches in Florida are terrible. Chicago has some of the best food, the best sandwiches in the world. Only Philadelphia has a better cheesesteak. This is in reference to me talking about the food court at the Midway Airport in Chicago at the beginning of this hour. An Italian cold cut sub in Boston is better than anywhere. So there's sort of a contradiction going on. We got Chicago and Boston for the sandwiches. I'm retired in Florida and hate the food. At the Miami Airport, it is the worst. Thank you for your email. I appreciate what you're saying, and I will be sure to eat before I land in Miami.
Ask him how he feels about the dual patrols between the Iraqis and the U.S. forces next.
Well, I don't know if he's had sandwiches in Iraq, but maybe
someone could send him one.
Yeah, right? But thank you for writing. Thank you for listening. So now it's time for my dream diary that some of you know, if you've been listening, that I've been keeping a dream diary in order to go into my therapist fully prepared to confront whatever issues are percolating in my unconscious. But I generally read them on the air. And this is last night's dream diary. Let me see if I can decipher my barely awake scribbling. Okay, here we go. I'm in the biggest shopping mall I've ever seen. Millions of stores, hundreds of levels, probably 50,000 Foot Lockers, 10,000 sharper images, and a hot dog on a stick place. Muzak is playing The Greatest Love of All over and over at top volume. Hundreds of people are walking in slow motion with their mouths open and their eyes like all glazed, and they're all carrying 10 to 12 heavy shopping bags, and every bag is full of red crew neck sweaters. What is that about? And that was like the only color in my dream. So I'm trying to get out, but every exit door leads to a movie theater showing the Alamo on all screens. I start to sweat Orange Julius. I scream.
What?
I scream, where's the parking lot? But the people just stare and pelt me with red crew neck sweaters. And I start walking on my hands because it makes sense at that moment. And I come across a huge store called Bush's Discount. I go in. The Alaskan wilderness is for sale. The sky is for sale. The earth is for sale. The Bush daughters are for sale. And even in my dream, I know that's a bad idea. A security guy with a shark fin and a red crew neck sweater says, "Everything must go." Then I'm in the food court and I'm drinking a smoothie made out of my own hands. I wake up and my bed is covered with sand.
So that was a gratuitous throwback reference, the Orange Julius
thing,
right?
Yeah, I'd say you guys laughed. What the heck is John Orange Julius?
Orange Julius was this famous orange drink that every mall had an Orange Julius place. And it was like a really popular drink. It must have been like the late 70s.
In those big plastic containers that they go round and round?
Well, no, it was a whipped thing, but it had like an egg in it and there was orange.
God.
Yeah, they mixed all kinds of stuff. And it was also a hot dog stand. They sold hot dogs along with this Orange Julius.
Yeah, hot dog on a stick places with the people with the big hats. Let's talk about important things. Peter in San Francisco, what's on your mind? Peter.
Talking about the war record is an excellent opportunity to bring up Bush's AWOL in 72.
Yeah, absolutely. He was AWOL. He got his dad to get him out of a lot of things, and that was one of them. And now people are starting to cover for him. But that's what we're trying to do is definitely raise awareness of that this is a guy that has no right to criticize anyone's war record. Thanks for the call, Peter. How about Richard in St. Louis?
Yeah, I think it just depends on how Kerry handles it. Because if he, wusses out, I hate to say, then, all Bush's supporters would go like, oh, well, there's something to hide. Because, hypocrisy just doesn't mean anything to these people.
That's absolutely right. I hope that people start. I wish that Kerry would, the thing is that's great about Kerry is that this is a guy that actually took a stand. He went to war, and then, he had his own personal problems and his own sort of trials of conscience, and he was bold enough to sort of speak up and be a stand-up person. I just hope he's able to do that again, and then we all stand up for him.
But, he doesn't, he hasn't really responded forcefully. I mean, he said he'd stack his war record up against anybody, but he hasn't pointed out Bush's record versus his.
I think he feels very vulnerable on that because they feel they kind of did that issue in the last election, and they're just going to be kind of shouted down for raising it again. And the other thing is that there's a disclosure problem that everybody has. I mean, they've got on Kerry's case for not releasing his medical records. And it seems to be that the public expects just more, less and less privacy for presidential candidates. And as that happens, this slippage at every election, that all the candidates get into trouble. Because everybody has something they don't really want to share with the public, whether it's medical records, war records, their private lives, their taxes, who they dated, how they broke up with their ex-wives. And, the public just expects just too much from people.
But it's also like, this guy, even in... Like, the beautiful thing about Kerry is that he was a veteran, with a well-decorated veteran who came home, stood up against the war, and actually quoted, he said this. He said, "We are here to say that it is not patriotism to ask Americans to die for a mistake." And that could even be said today. I mean, this guy's got big old cojones. There's no doubt about that. And he's got, a serious amount of strong character and real guts on all levels. And I think it's time that, we start saying that and people start realizing that this guy is showing us who he is. And, as disclosure happens, I do think that this war record will definitely stand up.
But you're right that he hasn't really kind of fought back very well on the issue that arose this weekend on whether or not he threw away some war medals or ribbons. And what's wrong with just with coming out, if you did do something like that, instead of kind of trying to come up with a sort of convoluted explanation, it was many years ago. I was young. I was angry.
Yeah,
kind
but
of
it was
big deal. Let's move
war,
on. Exactly, but he doesn't say that. It's always about trying to kowtow. It's trying to
he's
make it look
right.
as though he wasn't really protesting. Why don't we just say, you know, at the time, you know, I knew what I was talking about. I saw terrible things, and I was angry, and it was a legitimate protest. That was many years ago. That's no different than saying, I didn't inhale.
Right. Alice in Manhattan. Hi.
I'm a little nervous, so...
Okay, don't worry. It's just a few of us here.
Okay.
Mark will be nice to you. It's okay.
Okay, good. I just wanted to say that all these people who look at John Kerry's war record and say, well, he didn't really do anything, what they're saying in essence is that anybody who has ever gotten a medal in our military might have got it for nothing. And they're calling into question anybody who's ever gotten a medal, and they should be ashamed of themselves. We say... hey, we don't like the war. And they say, oh, you don't support the troops. Here they're saying to our decorated veterans, we think you may all be fakers.
I think only decorated Democrat veterans.
Well, you may read it that way. But if you look at it, this is what they're saying. They're saying that to get a Purple Heart means nothing. To get a Silver Star means nothing.
Yeah, they're making it conditional. And I think what you're saying is true, that if they're going to use this type of scrutiny on John Kerry, they are, you know, in an unspoken way using that type of criticism to all veterans who have been decorated.
No, I
agree with
that. Yeah, I do too. I think there is the question because, you know, I've seen people who've lost limbs in wars.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're never the same people afterwards.
Right.
They really aren't. And to an extent, what they're doing to Kerry could be done to anybody. Could be done to any...
Well, they did it to Max Cleveland, too. This is a guy who's a triple amputee, and because of
the Georgia senator.
The conditions that, you know, that he lost his limbs in, which, you know, it doesn't really matter. He was at war. He was in a place where war was happening. And, you know, those medals are awarded to people who, you know, are injured in war.
But it's about trying to make the argument your own when it serves your purpose. Because Bush was down at Fort Hood, Texas, and gave out 10 Purple Hearts a couple of weeks ago. You know, there's no way he's going to say that those guys didn't deserve it. They got it for fighting in Iraq.
Right, and he's not going to apply the same criticism to them as he is to Kerry.
It's about Vietnam. It's about trying to kind of do down the reputation of anybody who fought and then badmouthed the U.S. involvement in Vietnam.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. Aren't we, as a country, aren't we all aware that Vietnam was, you know, a colossal mistake and that, you know, and that it wasn't a winnable war and the reasons we were there were, you know, highly questionable? I mean, aren't we all up to speed on that?
If you're reasonable, yes. If you apply kind of, you know, history and kind of knowledge and some kind of common sense. But I don't think that the Bush administration wants that, especially now when you hear people trying to make the comparison between being bogged down in Iraq and being in Vietnam.
But can't you call
very, very, very touchy subject now.
War is full of atrocity. Atrocity is definitely the right word, no matter whose team you're on. I mean, you know, what happens in war is an atrocity of all kinds. It's just that when Kerry used that word and the way Karen Hughes criticized that word is that, you know, it means something specific in relation to Vietnam because there were some real questionable events that happened in that war and that were brought to the public forum by, you know, Lieutenant Calley and that
of
stuff.
But the thing is, this is, you're talking about a re-election year. You're talking about somebody with a, at best, spotty service record who's trying to run for re-election against a bona fide war hero. Somehow you've got to try and erode that imbalance because there is an imbalance there. Anybody that looks at it logically, Kerry was in the service, still carrying a piece of shrapnel. Where was George Bush?
Why don't people call him on that, though? Go ahead, Sue. I'm sorry.
So, no, I just think that the thing about atrocities in the war and absolutely being an election year, it's about trying to block any kind of information about violence and deaths and injuries on civilians. That's when the word atrocity becomes kind of very incendiary. If it's terrible things that happen during the course of war between soldiers, that's sort of okay, but it all plays back into last week with the not wanting the American public to see flags on coffins, wanting to keep control
of
our images.
They're definitely happening now, and, you know, that'll come out in 20 years, 10 years, hopefully sooner.
Soon. Still ahead, the attacks on John Kerry get personal. Mark Maron's morning devotional, plus our favorite Mideast correspondent has a dispatch, live right here in our New York studios, when we continue here on Air America Radio.
First there was fear, then confusion and ignorance, but now we face something even more dangerous in the fight against AIDS.
complacency. I'm Sharon Stone, and I want to make something very clear. AIDS is not over. Yes, we've made remarkable progress, and now there are treatments that can extend lives. But this is one tough, smart, nasty virus. It is infecting more people every year. Over time, HIV can become resistant to the new medications designed to fight it. That's why AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research, is so important. AMFAR pushes the envelope, funding cutting-edge research and working toward solutions that will offer real freedom to people living with AIDS. It's not easy work, and it's not inexpensive. We need your help to make sure it continues. Call 1-800-39-AMFAR. 1-800-39-AMFAR. In the fight against AIDS, we've bought time. More research will buy answers.
You're listening to 1190 WLIV New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America, why the Bush campaign thinks you should see records of Theresa Hines' taxes, but not Dick Cheney's energy meetings. Plus, George W. takes inventory in today's recovery corner. But first, now, the headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. With the impending transfer of power in Iraq just weeks away, leadership of the Iraqi National Congress, Ahmad Shalabi, has sharply criticized the American plan that will only provide limited sovereignty to an Iraqi government on July 1st. Shalabi says the plan is unworkable and that most Iraqis would not accept it. Shalabi also assailed the United Nations proposal to allow only members of high-ranking status in Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath Party to serve in the new government. Shalabi's comments come on the heels of a Bush administration decision to have a United Nations ambassador structure the new government. Iraq's capital was the scene of what best can be described as a huge fireball this morning with the explosion of a perfume factory. Four U.S. military Humvees were destroyed in the blast. No word on casualties at the moment. In Fallujah, the coalition is giving officials two more days to hammer out a permanent peace plan with the disarming of insurgent forces or else face one of the worst assaults since the start of the war. Fallujah in the month of April has been a killing field for American forces. U.S. soldier was killed in a roadside bomb attack in Baghdad yesterday. At least two civilians were killed in shooting afterwards. Seaborne assailants attacked Iraq's two offshore oil terminals during the weekend, temporarily shutting off much of the country's exports. Situation remains volatile in Najaf. Top U.S. spokesman in Iraq, Dan Senor, has this account of the scene there.
A dangerous situation is developing in Najaf, where weapons are being stockpiled in mosques and in shrines and in schools.
U.S. spokesman Dan Senor, it was one of the biggest demonstrations in U.S. history. Protesters crowded the National Mall yesterday in support of abortion rights and to protest the Bush administration's policies on women's health worldwide. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Just when you thought politics couldn't get any dirtier, now Bill Hilsman is dragging it to a new low. Bill Hilsman says our current election system is run solely for the profit of political parties, pollsters, and special interest groups. Bill Hilsman says the two major political parties are denying Americans more choices by shutting out new candidates and new ideas. And Bill Hilsman accuses Republicans and Democrats of using negative advertising to actually lower voter turnout. Bill Hilsman. Bad for Republicans. Bad for Democrats. Bad for America.
Wait a minute. What office is Bill Hilsman running for?
He's not. Hilsman was a consultant for Paul Wellstone, Jesse Ventura, and Ralph Nader. But his new book, Run the Other Way, is bad for the political establishment. Bad for America.
So, Bill Hilsman is a threat to everyone in politics, and they don't want you to read Run the Other Way.
I'll say again. Run the Other Way by Bill Hilsman in bookstores now is bad for Washington insiders, bad for America.
Political pundits continue to examine President Bush's apparent success to maintain huge support for the U.S. occupation of Iraq. This in spite of the escalating American death toll and the cost of the war. Many point to the administration's success in limiting the amount of coverage on American casualties. Still, other analysts say that Bush has managed to convince a cross-section of Americans that the struggle in Iraq is part of the fight against Al-Qaeda. And still others say the support by foreign countries for the American occupation is another factor. A Washington Post ABC News poll last week indicated indicated that most Americans support Bush over Democratic rival John Kerry when it comes to handling the war in Iraq. Recent killing of three American correction officers at a Kosovo prison continues to draw much in the way of speculation. A weekend report suggested that there may be a link to the Palestinian extremist group Hamas. A senior NATO official has been quoted as saying there may be a possible link. There's no definitive information on what prompted the guard to open fire on the three. Wayne Gilman, Air America, Radio News.
Okay then, Dr. Carter. Thanks a lot. I'll see you next time. All right, Mr. Stewart. Now remember, keep taking your pills every day.
Mr. Stewart is one of my patients. He's got high blood pressure. So we talked about how that also puts him at risk for kidney disease. Kidney disease doesn't have any real warning signs. But if you have high blood pressure or diabetes, or a family member with kidney failure, you're at risk. So now Mr. Stewart gets simple testing done for kidney disease when he comes in. He's lucky and smart. Because if you don't get checked for kidney disease now, you could be on the waiting list for a kidney transplant later.
If you have diabetes or high blood pressure, or a family member with kidney failure, ask your doctor or healthcare professional to test you. For a free brochure, call toll-free 1-866-4-KIDNEY, because you have the power to prevent kidney disease. Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health, National Kidney Disease Education Program.
If you have diabetes, you already know you could develop kidney failure, lose a limb, or go blind. But did you know that 2 out of 3 people with diabetes actually die from heart disease or stroke? Lower your risk of heart disease and stroke by lowering your blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol. Ask your doctor to tell you more about the link between diabetes and heart disease, or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association and the American College of Cardiology.
Escape into a world where time drifts slowly. Where the music sweeps you away. Welcome to the world of Pure Moves 4, featuring the music of Mythos, Enigma, Yanni, George Winston, and Jan Tiersen's theme from Amelie. Pure Moves 4 also features soothing music from Jim Brickman, B-Tribe, Sarah McLachlan, Eva Cassidy, Secret Garden, and more. Escape into the world of evocative mood music with Pure Moods 4. 18 timeless songs to relax and unwind to. On sale now at Borders Books and Music locations everywhere.
Remember the last time you bit into a sweet, crunchy apple or enjoyed a fresh salad? The Harvest of Hope Foundation reminds you that many of the foods you enjoy are harvested through the hard work of migrant farm workers and their families. Please make a donation to the Harvest of Hope Foundation so we can continue to provide emergency aid and educational scholarships to migrant families and their children. Check out the Harvest of Hope Foundation's website at harvestofhope.net or call toll-free 1-888-922-4673.
Hi, Mark Maron here, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning. Today, what kind of car does Kerry's wife, Teresa, drive? I mispronounced it before. And do unemployed Americans really give a rat's ass? Good question. Maybe we'll answer that. Plus, I'll have our morning devotional. But right now I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott, and we're all percolating. We're all up and at it.
Hey.
You know what, man? I got to tell you, I had this epiphany over the weekend on Saturday. I read that big article on Kerry. Did you read it in the New York Times?
Mm-hmm.
Kerry's anti-war pass is a delicate issue in his campaign. And I all of a sudden realized that this guy he's full of character. You know what I mean? He's really done some bold and courageous stuff in his life. I mean, to stand up like he did coming back from Vietnam and then to go against the war and do it publicly and sort of, you know, that takes a lot of courage. I mean, this guy has real character as opposed to the guy that we have in office now who has really none. He has nothing to rest his laurels on other than the fact that he was sort of taken care of, had a silver spoon in his mouth his whole life. And I'm starting to realize that all this time that we've been saying, when's Kerry going to step up? When's he going to step up? I think he really is sort of stepping up.
I think Sorry. I just think the problem is that they both, you know, let's face facts, they both have had silver spoons in their mouths. It's just they chose to go in a different direction.
No, but
Bush went in a very simplistic direction, and Kerry went in a more kind of complicated, nuanced direction.
No, but he went to war. He went to war. He fought in a war. Silver spoon or no silver spoon.
Oh, no, I admire him. I'm not trying to put him down. I'm just saying that's why he seems vulnerable, because the Bush administration want things to just be black and white the whole time.
But that was, I mean, I don't think that's relative to, you know, to silver spoons or choosing directions. I think that what's really beneath Kerry and the choices he's made in his life were deep and courageous choices all the way through. And I don't think that George Bush has ever had to make those kind of choices. I mean, what kind of choices did he make? You know, to stop drinking so he wouldn't kill himself? I mean, I'm glad he made that choice as a person. But, I mean, what has he really faced?
So then the question is, why hasn't the character that you've seen in John Kerry been transmitted to the American people?
Because I think that the Republicans are obfuscating it. Is that the word that I want to use? That they're sort of like they're destroying it at every turn subtly. They're kind of, you know, pinning him in corners every turn, every little thing that he takes. And he doesn't want to look like he's cornered. He just wants to, you know, talk his talk and make sure that people are trying to understand.
Defining him is what they're doing.
Yeah, I know that. And I think it's the wrong definition. And I think that the way that they're doing it is just, it's insidious, it's intentional, it's very well organized, as we all know. Just the fact that they put, you know, like, Bob Woodward's book is on the Bush campaign website as you know, like,
recommended
reading. Thank God a lot of the people that go to that aren't going to read. You know, they're just going to go, oh, well, I've seen that book on TV. You know, but...
I'm baffled as to how they think that can benefit the Bush administration. I would really love to interview a kind of a right-wing conservative and ask how they think that book possibly helps the profile.
They
and
don't
makes
care.
They must be reading. It's like a Rorschach test. They must be reading something into that book that I am just completely missing.
I really think they're disarming it. I really think that by putting it on the campaign site, they're assuming that the people that see it will just assume that it's a good book. That if people respond to television advertisements about anything, they're pretty stupid. Really. All right. So if they just put that book up there and people see it as recommended reading, that's enough. All they're going to think is like, oh, it's a good book.
So let's not read it. It's a good book. Let's not read it.
Of course.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that
how
this is such an attack administration that when anything comes out, whether it's a person speaking out, whether it's, you know, whether it's Paul O'Neill talking to Ron Susskind in his book, whether it's Dick Clark speaking out, that anything that comes out that they disagree with, they're all over it. It's muzzle it. It's you know, it's denigrate it. It's, you know, tear it apart and give it no validation whatsoever. Well, they are seeing something in that book that they like. They think that it makes George Bush seem strong. They like the fact that, you know, his oratory comes through. He's the only person who speaks
right
on the record. And I think it
well, that's
it shows,
just a, he's
you know,
the only
how,
guy that they name in the book.
Well, it shows you 75
people
unnamed.
Talked. Yeah, yeah.
But, no, I mean, if you don't agree with George Bush, you don't like George Bush, you look at that book as just kind of validating everything that you think about him.
But if you do agree with him?
Well, that's why we need to find someone, we need to find a Republican who's read that book and go, like, why? Or as someone who put that book on the website and asked them, what do you see in this book? Because I'm fascinated about why they think that book benefits George Bush.
Here's the big
question.
And it
just shows him having kind of misled us, having you know, given the Saudis, you know, far more authority than they've led us to believe that they had in determining, you know, how the war was run.
The Bushes are Bender's bitches.
Speaking of which, he was on TV. He's in the paper today. But, you know, one of the things, I think you're right, sir. I think that the Republicans have obviously found something in this book that they think burnishes George W. Bush. And my guess is that it's the whole idea that he may have been in error, but he was never in doubt. It seems as though the people that support him and his poll numbers are going up. I mean, say what you will about the polls. His poll numbers seem to be either holding steady or going up on a number of issues, particularly the war.
People get exhausted of thinking.
It could just be that Bob Woodward made him write in whole, intelligible sentences.
Yeah.
Yeah, that may be.
Who's doing all the reading? That's what I want to know.
People, I was in Washington, D.C. over the weekend. I was waiting to get a train yesterday after the abortion rally.
Yeah.
And there were people in the borders at Union Station in Washington, D.C. I saw four people by plan of attack.
Oh, they are buying
it. Yeah. Good book.
But the question is, do they
read
it?
Are they reading it, you mean?
You know,
well, the train journey on Amtrak was long and delayed. I think they probably did.
I buy a lot of books that I just have. If you look at my bookshelf, I have some of the greatest books ever written with bookmarks at about page 30.
Now, my friends are reading that book this weekend. I think that people do read those books because you can get...
Sue, you couldn't even get through it. You told me last week that it was unreadable.
It's badly written. I think that his writing is boring. I think it makes, I think that the reporting side of it is kind of very interesting, but as a piece of kind of literature, I always cared too much about the writing. I don't think the writing is good, but the content is
fascinating. But I'm thinking if you can't get through it, a lot of people aren't going to be able to get through
it. Yeah, but I get up at 2 in the morning. Everybody else who's up at 7 definitely should be able to get through it.
Did you read the other
will
one? Will
get through it?
I like Clark's book.
Yeah. Did you read the whole thing?
No, not yet.
Okay, good. Okay. So
I will.
How about the O'Neill book? Did you read that?
No, only parts of it.
All right, then. See what I'm saying?
Listen, how many books are thrown at me per day?
Well, listen, it's not going to come out in book form, but there is going to be a report from the 9/11 panel, a final report. And now there is word that the 9/11 panel is going to criticize sharply NORAD. That's the North American Aerospace Defense Command. This was a question, by the way, that came up in the immediate aftermath of September 11th. Where was America's defense system during that crucial period between the first plane hitting the World Trade Center and the
air response?
Yeah, where was it? Yeah.
Was
no, no, even the Pentagon, which happened almost an hour later.
Was that 45 minutes, 55 minutes later?
Yeah.
Where was the air response?
Yeah, where was the air response? And now the 9/11 panel has spoken to people at NORAD who have apparently acknowledged that they should have been able to intercept the plane that hit the Pentagon.
How does that help us now?
Well,
was they going to say we've changed our system and that we were all on the ball 24/7 every second of the day and it'll never happen again? I mean, what does this acknowledgement that it could have been better and it should have happened but didn't, where is that getting us?
It should get us to a point where they do a better job next
right.
time.
I think, I used to be pretty conspiratorial about that whole thing, whether it was allowed to happen or whatever. And then you just start to think about people. Like, look at us, the way we, got into the studio today, we weren't quiet on our game, we were a little tired, and you start to think about these guys at NORAD. They've just got is that a double latte? Good. Now what is that plane there? Has anyone made a call about that? There could have been just a bunch of people just waking up going, that can't be happening. What's wrong with the machine? Hit it. Hit the machine. Whereas it might not have been a conspiracy. It might have just been oversight. So hopefully this report will encourage them to stay a little more on top of it in the morning.
Well, part of the problem, too, is that NORAD has not exactly cooperated with the commission. Here we got Tom Kaine, again, a Republican, a moderate Republican. And he couldn't get subpoenas answered by NORAD. Plus, and I think this may be where people are
focused. But NORAD, it's an armed forces thing. I mean, who do they answer to, NORAD?
The president.
That's it? So it's like a separate, special, secret
thing?
Well,
no, they probably answer
to the Defense Department, I think.
They answer to
the Russian Department. It's not within a branch of the military. It is its own thing.
No, it's
part of the Pentagon.
No, yeah. I get it. Okay.
But see, now, there is a memo that was that came out in April 2001 saying that NORAD considered an exercise where military commanders would weigh how to respond to a plane hitting the Pentagon. And 5 months later, a plane, in fact, hit the Pentagon.
But they didn't have the
paperwork done. They didn't have the
Now, we care about all this, and we're noticing all of this, but, my big fear, especially having kind of got out of Washington, D.C. and New York, and I was in these really small towns in Maryland this weekend, is that I don't think a lot of people are really paying such close attention to these things coming out of the 9/11 panel. They just see it as partisan.
They're doing what they did with Bob Woodward's book, too, is they're just sort of like, they're just, like when Bush came out last week and said it's a tough country to defend, and that kind of stuff, they're just sort of saying, like, yeah, we hear the commission, and, we understand that we're just, it's difficult, and we're going to do better. That's all.
By the way, before we go to break, there is more fighting now going on in Fallujah.
Well, we'll cover it when we come back, along with the morning devotional here on Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. Talk radio you don't have to roll your eyes to.
Hi, I'm Cheyenne for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Drinking and driving don't mix. So if you've been drinking, don't drive. Choose a designated driver. The life you save may be your own. And remember, music lives and so should you.
Yeah. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Looking to do something good? Well, there's lots teenagers can do, like saving the rare speckled Burmese bear cub.
Isn't he cute? Okay,
be careful, Susan. That's too cute. Don't feed him. Wow, that's gotta hurt.
Or how about just saving something closer to home, like your neighborhood? Tutor, mentor, volunteer. Help change your community and change the way the world sees you. Click on WePrevent.org or call 1-800-722-TEENS.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the Ad Council.
Dear Calvary Hospital, when my wife Maureen's cancer advanced, her pain tremendously increased, a pain that no one person or any hospital could ease. We knew that this was no way to live and certainly no way to die. Then one day I visited Calvary, unannounced, and was still given a full tour by one of your staff. I immediately realized that this was no ordinary hospital. Once at Calvary, Maureen's suffering eased. She was sitting up, talking, and even eating ice cream. For those few precious days, you gave her back her dignity, and you gave me back my wife. I tell people today not to settle for just any hospital. There is another place. It's called Calvary. Sincerely, Ben Fargioni.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Insurance companies do not have the right to deny you Calvary's expert care. In fact, it's the law. So don't be denied. Call us at 718-518-2000 or visit calvaryhospital.org.
Daddy, why is the sky blue?
To match your pretty eyes.
Nope. See, all colors have wavelengths that are diffused by oxygen and nitrogen. Since blue has the shortest wavelength, it's diffused up to 10 times more.
Who taught you that?
Mommy?
By sixth grade, too many girls lose interest in math and science, which they'll need for most future jobs. Keep her interest alive. For ideas, go to girlsgotech.org. It's her future. Do the math. A public service message brought to you by Girl Scouts of the USA and the Ad Council.
In this corner, Wayne Central comes, the challenger, your house! And in the red corner, way next to nothing, the undisputed champion of the world, Wildfire!
Think your house can win the fight? Visit firewise.org to find out how you can help make your home more defensible against wildfires. Firewise.org, a public service brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Randy Rhodes.
See, this is the stinking thinking people have. They think that Osama is the problem, which is true, and that we should attack Iraq. That right there should tell you everything you need to know about what is going on in this country and why it's wrong. Say, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. The Germans declared war on us, which most people don't realize. Let's attack Mexico.
Randy Rhodes, afternoons 3 to 7 on Air America Radio.
Welcome. Good morning. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly and Sue Ellicott. The Ramones!
I like that song. It's I always like song. That song.
The Ramones are great. And now it's that time of day, Mark, where we do our morning devotional, where we reach out to God and ask for his guidance. Dear Lord, today we'd like to say a prayer for your servant John Kerry. He took communion the other day, and even though a cardinal at the Vatican said he shouldn't be able to because of his views on abortion rights, he did it anyways. Lord, I'm a little confused. Why are your guys giving Kerry such a hard time? America's this close to having a Catholic president. Among the many benefits, the environment, the economy, on and on. And is that it? And also that it would irritate the KKK. Now, you've got to be in favor of that, Lord. Besides the last time we had a Catholic president, gas cost a nickel a gallon and we had the Rat Pack. Look at history, Lord. Kerry is a good church-going man. Good hair, smells nice.
Europe, can you go that close to him?
Europe loves him.
I'm worried about you.
A Catholic president is bound to be a big hit over there in Europe, especially in Italy. Consider how that would shift the balance of power. Italy, hey, all right. Now, I don't want to get into the abortion thing with you, Lord, when life begins and all that, because you know that stuff, and I don't, all right? And I'm comfortable with that. All I'm saying is, tell your guys to lighten up on Kerry a little bit. We need him. Wow, do we need him. And it's not like Bush has been listening to the Vatican either. Amen. kind of a confusing devotional for me this morning.
Buongiorno, John. I'm going Italian on
Wait,
you.
Got
there you go.
Man, what a day. So Kerry's taken such a beating, and I want to stand up for him, Riley. I think you should.
I think we all should.
What did you just read about the Democrats are sort of like, they're saying that he's not really showing up and dismantling Bush's foreign policy like he said he would, and now these ads are coming out calling into question his ability to be a wartime consigliere. Like in The Godfather, you're not a wartime president.
Yeah.
But I think he is, and I think I'm starting to believe in John Kerry more than I have previous.
Well, they're putting out $10 million to change your mind, or maybe not to change your mind, but to change people's minds about John Kerry's stance on national security.
Yeah.
They're going after him tooth and nail. And there are some Democrats, specifically the executive director of Democracy Corps, which is a research organization, says that they've done focus groups that say that he hasn't broken through the barrier. In other words, his war hero status hasn't resonated with the American people.
Well, the ad is all about, you know, him not, you know, allotting money and bills to certain military
weapons.
Hardware.
Yes.
And a lot of people see the way they spin that is so ridiculous. This whole flip-flopping is ridiculous just because of the way legislation works. I mean, certain bills include a lot of other things, and people change their minds. I mean, Kerry's been in the Senate for years. I mean, he's going to have voted on things a lot of different ways because certain things are removed from bills as they progress through the House.
But you know what the problem is? That someone like Kerry, who's smart and is reflective and does evolve and does change his mind on things, is very unlike Bush, who does not change his mind, no matter what information any of his advisors, any experts gave him about Iraq, about the Middle East. He sticks to something.
But he's also got no record.
He sticks to it.
Other than being a governor.
That's where Kerry is vulnerable for being smart and evolving. And the thing that really worried me over the weekend, I got very depressed on my long train journey back from Washington on Amtrak yesterday.
That was just because he had to come to work.
No, because I was looking back over four or five days of newspapers, things that I'd meant to read over last week and didn't get to it. And there was this picture emerging of how tight the race is and how so many people, even in the battleground states, have made up their minds. 70% of American people, according to something I read in the Washington Post, 70% of Americans have made up their minds who they're going to vote for in November, and they said that there's no way they're going to change it.
Is that just so they would free up some mental space to think about other things?
I don't know, the food at Midway Airport. How can you be that committed to it? It's terrifying. It just shows you how close it is and how these battleground states are so crucial. And so that's why they're going after Kerry on national security, because that's the thing they think Bush is strongest on.
And here's the thing about changing your vote or voting against certain spending for certain material, whether it's weapons or tanks or whatever.
Right.
These tanks are built in specific places,
right.
And in many instances, they are the pet projects of different legislators. For example, Trent Lott in Mississippi. They've got a huge defense contract down there building. I think it was C-130s.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that people fund these weapons programs based simply on the merits is absurd.
Right, on ideological issues.
No, what happens
is
I need to get some jobs in my part of whatever state it is I represent. And this is particularly true in the Senate, where people are representing entire states.
Right.
So in many cases, they horse trade. And they say, okay, well, we'll support this project for your area if you support my project for this area. And if you don't play that game, then you're seen as... Suddenly, you know,
on the other side of that, you guys got guys saying, vote against this,
yeah.
You know, because I want it to come to my state, and that becomes a partisan issue sometimes.
Exactly.
But it's not, what you're saying is it's not an ideological issue. He's not voting against weapons because he doesn't believe in the weapons or he doesn't believe in the war. It's usually just a tit-for-tat business issue with other states and the other, you know, and Republican senators.
Yeah, and it's certainly not because he has abandoned the war on terror. That's absurd.
No, I think he would be a great military leader. I think he understands the necessity of staying in Iraq until, you know, it is at least in order to return to the Iraqis. And I think that he has a complete capability of being a military leader if necessary.
There is something he might be missing a beat on. I mean, when you're Bush is trying to convince the Americans that, you know, Kerry would not be a strong enough president in time of war. I don't understand why Kerry doesn't come back and say, we shouldn't even still be at war. By the time I get elected in November, I want us out of there. We should still not be in Iraq in November.
It's going to go on for a while.
Yeah, it is.
Could go on. That's what Bush said. Could go on for, you know,
gonna,
one year. Very at the very beginning, he said 1 year, 2 years, a second term.
Right, but if they were handling it differently, if they hadn't escalated the violence in the way that they have in the last couple of weeks, if they had relied more on diplomacy, if they had kind of really understood that inside Iraq, what's going on now is kind of a battle for what Islam is, and they turned it, they've united Sunnis and Shias against the United States, and they've turned it into like a jihad that it didn't need to become. They could be out sooner than they're going to be out now.
Well, I think that the great thing about Kerry also is that I think he really realizes that war is bad and that there is some sort of, you know, issue in America. There is some sort of cultural thing going on where that, you know, if you say that or you think that, I mean, he's a guy who's been to war and has seen atrocities and realizes that war should only be necessary when it's truly necessary. And I think that ideologically, to have a guy in office as a military leader who understands the real horror of war would be a great benefit to this country.
Here's my question to you.
To me.
Before we go, because we've got a break in a couple of minutes. What do you think is going to happen with the attacks on his wife? Because now it's like she drives an Audi, she won't release her taxes, she's become an issue.
It's easy to go after the woman, isn't it?
I think it seems petty to me, but I understand that when you're running for office, there needs to be full disclosure. Obviously, the car thing may have been, you know, an oversight on some level, but maybe she's had the car for years. She likes the car. So what?
It's a 2001.
All right, so maybe it was a mistake to buy that car.
You know what? But you know, the point, I mean, I'm all for full disclosure, but you know what? Don't have an SUV in your family unless you've converted it to be environmentally friendly if you
SUV?
Want to run for Democrat.
All right, we'll be back with Recovery Corner and other things here on Air America.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Hundreds of thousands of abortion rights supporters staged one of the largest protests in memory in the nation's capital yesterday. They were not only there to continue their support for a woman's right to choose, but to protest the Bush administration's policies on women's health worldwide. Protesters marched past the White House vowing to stop the president from winning a second term. An explosion that leveled a building in part of northern Baghdad today has wounded several American soldiers and Iraqis. 10 Americans were taken away in ambulances. Several Iraqis were carried out of the rubble from the blast, which also destroyed four American Humvees. The total number of injured or killed was not immediately known. Federal government has given failing grades to all 50 states for their child welfare programs. A review conducted over the last 3 years found that no state fully complies with federal standards in protecting children. And U.S. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton has slammed the Bush administration over what she called as the administration's failure in implementing the No Child Left Behind Act. Clinton spoke at the Freedom Weekend convention of the NAACP in Detroit. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down. But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd President of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax Bush once and for all.
Welcome back to Morning Sedition here on Air America. I am Mark Maron. I am here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott, and we have a guest in the studio. With April by far the deadliest month for the U.S. and Iraq, and two major cities, Fallujah and Najaf. How do you pronounce it?
Najaf.
Oh, that was good the first time. Posing big military problems. While the U.S. tries to get U.N. help in achieving the June 30th handoff, there are serious new questions about what path Iraq will take. Borzu Deragahi is a journalist who reports from Iraq and Iran. He usually joins us by phone, but today he's right in the studio, right here in this country. Borzu, how are you?
Doing well. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. When did you get back?
Tuesday.
Wow. You a little jet lag still, or is he over it?
You know, it's really funny. I still have some jet lag.
Yeah, it lasts. It stays in. So what does it say now that the CPA is hedging a bit on the handover stuff?
I mean, maybe it shows some maturity. You know, I mean, maybe it shows some flexibility. You know, all along there's been this conflict between the more pragmatic people on the ground in Baghdad and in Iraq, and the people who are basically there to run a plan.
Right.
Sort of an ideological vision.
Without any real sensitivity to the people.
Without any real sensitivity to reality. And it maybe shows some, and this has been chronicled pretty well in the mainstream press. The Washington Post has done a masterful job of showing how they had all these sort of ideological visions, plans to turn Iraq into Ohio or whatever, and they kept running
bring them
into,
all in. They already had Starbucks ready to open.
And they kept running into these sort of facts on the ground as like, look, that's just not the reality here, and they've had to back off. And maybe the recent flexibility that they're showing is a sign of maturity.
That's how they would like to put it anyway, rather than a sign of defeat that they'd bitten off more than they could chew.
What about pulling the Baathists back in?
I think that's probably a wise decision, you know. I mean, the Baathists, although they had their troubles, you know, they were nationalists and they were Iraqis and, you know, their potential and basically secular and potentially the greatest allies that you know, the U.S. could have.
How do other Iraqis feel about that?
I think that a lot of Iraqis are probably relieved. There will be some that will be upset. The problem is that there's no one to credibly explain to them what's going on. I think the U.S. has lost a lot of its credibility and doesn't have the ability to say, look, this is why we're doing this, because no one will listen to them.
It's sort of teachers and Iraqi military leaders they're putting back in because they want to make Iraqi people feel that they are actually more involved in transition to sovereignty.
A lot of very talented people were in the Baathist Party, and they joined just because they had to.
Secular people,
yeah. And they handed this debathification process to a guy, Ahmad Chalabi, who has no credibility, you know. And as it turns out, he's even come under criticism from, you know, Bremer, the Bremer circle as well.
For what?
For mishandling the whole debathification process, turning it into a den of cronyism and corruption and unequal justice.
But now he was on TV yesterday.
That was amazing. It was so appalling what he said.
But what I'm curious about is, will there be any repercussions at all? Because apparently the UN plan has no provisions for him whatsoever. What's going to happen to this guy?
To Chalabi?
Yeah, to Chalabi.
I got a feeling.
Will he have any influence? Well, I mean, he was the one that the neoconservatives pushed. Wolfowitz and all those people, they were in his corner. They're just going to hang him out to dry?
It's a very interesting guy, Chalabi. I've interviewed him before. Someone described him to me once as a commission taker. He promises something to someone and then something else to someone else, and then when the deal goes through, he takes his toll in terms of money and so on.
So you're saying that a guy like that will never be without money?
Will never be without power or money.
Right.
So yesterday was on, Mark Riley mentioned he was on television. He was on Fox News Sunday, and he called Lakhmar Brahimi, who's the United Nations guy who's helping. He's basically done a lot to kind of stabilize the situation and get diplomacy kind of moving along. He referred to him as an Algerian with an Arab nationalist agenda. I mean, it was just so patronizing.
I think in this particular instance, I think we could use some Arab nationalism to fight some of the ethnic longings and religious fundamentalism. I think that's probably a compliment.
It was? I just
in this
just,
context. No, I mean, maybe that's not how he meant it. But.
What about the fight for sort of this, like Sistani and al-Sadr? Yeah, I mean, how is that? I mean, Sistani seems like he's being, you know, fairly diplomatic for a spiritual leader, and obviously Sadr is not so diplomatic, but how is that playing out there? What does Sistani want?
Well, I mean, what's interesting about Sistani is, I mean, the way they describe their position is that, like, look, you know, I mean, Sistani's a very, very enlightened cleric, does not want a clerical government. And I think that what he's trying to explain to the Americans in his way is that, look, you know, maybe I wouldn't mind a version of Ohio in Iraq.
Right.
Maybe you wouldn't mind it, but that's really not the point. If we don't follow through with a political process that has some legitimacy, we're going to turn this into Lebanon. We're going to turn this into a real the civil war situation.
We're talking with Borzu Deragahi, a journalist who usually reports to us from Iraq and Iran, and he's here with us in the studio now.
I wanted to ask you a question about Iran, because it was last week, I believe, that President Bush said publicly that any attempt by Iran to develop any kind of a nuclear weapons program would be, I guess in his words, unacceptable. How did that play in Iran?
I mean, this nuclear issue is a very complicated one. I think that the Iranians are trying to test the waters. You know, they see that the U.S. and the international community are in a sort of position of weakness with regard to stemming the proliferation of nuclear weapons because they're so mired in Iraq.
Preoccupied a bit.
Exactly. So they're just trying to test to see how far they can go. I don't think that the Iranians are without fault in this particular issue. Time after time, being revealed to committing violations of nuclear nonproliferation treaties.
Bruce, I'm interested in how you think that the new idea they're going to start as early as tomorrow, having the Iraqi and American military patrols in cities in Iraq, how that's going to play out, whether you think that is going to be a good way of stopping the anti-U.S. violence that we've seen in the last couple of weeks.
Well, there have been joint patrols between Iraq's new civil defense forces and new army and U.S. soldiers for a while now. They've been doing that for a while. I think that the complication comes when some people think that it would discredit the new Iraqi forces to be seen as the puppets of the Americans. They become targets too, and that's been a lot of trouble with the new Iraqi defense forces and military forces being targeted by insurgents as well.
Can I see? Do you want to follow up?
No, just because this is their idea, though, of kind of calming things down. Because the American military over the last few days have been like, we're running out of patience. We're going to have a full scale attack, you know, on Fallujah, and they've been kind of warned, you know, back off. This kind of, you know, overzealous military approach is just dangerous. You're just fanning the flames here. So I'm just curious whether you think that this is actually going to help, and things will simmer down. They'll be able to have some negotiations that make everybody happier.
I don't think that the Americans understand the nature of people like Muqtada al-Sadr or the insurgents in Fallujah. I mean, for these people, you know, they're very, 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 very religious people who, for them, it's an honor to die in battle. So they keep coming up with these threatening, kind of humiliating threats. These insurgents are not going to say, oh, okay, we're sorry, we're going to back off. You got to come up with a way that they can save face, too. And I think that maybe if you use Iraqi military forces instead of American military forces, maybe you could defuse the situation. Maybe that's the thinking there.
Okay, we'll take calls for Borzu Deragahi when we come back at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. We'll also have Recovery Corner and all kinds of other fun stuff here on Air America.
Air America Radio, making AM radio cool again.
Hi, I'm Edward James Olmos. I'm here to talk to you about RAD, Recording Artists, Actors, and Athletes Against Drunk Driving. Think about it. You have choices that you can make in your life, good choices and bad ones. Drinking and driving, bad choice. Why? The life you may take may even be your own. Think about it. Drinking and driving doesn't mix. Get a designated driver.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kicksburg.
I'm Ronnie Dunn.
And we're Brooks.
And Dunn for RAD. And I've got a four-letter word for you. Don't, as in don't drive drunk.
Yep, and I got a three-letter word for you, as in get. Get the keys.
When you see someone who's about to drive under the influence,
get the keys.
Because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Well, good morning, everybody. Will you parents please settle down so I can take the classroom attendance? Thank you. Okay, here we go. Brittany's mom and dad.
Present.
Present.
Justin's mom.
Present.
Lisa's dad. I said Lisa's dad. Well, maybe he's on his way. I hope he makes it. Lisa really needs his support. You know, your life can be hectic, but that's really no excuse. You have to get involved in your child's education. It will make a difference, believe me, whether it's checking homework or visiting with the teacher. Be present in your child's classroom. There's always a seat open with your name on it. Well, look who just showed up. Lisa's dad.
Yes, I made it. Present.
There are many ways to get involved in your child's school. Discover how. Call 1-800-281-1313. Or visit www.schoolsuccessinfo.org. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and Partners for Public Education, a partnership for the NAACP and People for the American Way Foundation.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk. Yes, 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 yes.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Listen to Air America Radio whenever and wherever you want. We're available 24/7 on the internet. Just hit our website, www.airamericaradio.com. All you need to do is complete a quick online registration. Once that's done, you're ready to take us live. Air America uses the Real One Player for our streaming. www.airamericaradio.com. Streaming now, live, 24/7. www.airamericaradio.com.
It's 14 before the hour. I'm Mark Maron, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America. We are taking your calls for journalist Borzu Daragahi here at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. This is a good opportunity to ask questions about Iraq, anything to do with Iraq, politics, the dynamics of the occupation, anything, because he knows what he's talking about. And first, we're going to do a little something here that we do every day. Hi, I'm Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
It's time for Recovery Corner. This is where I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. And as always, I'm offering counsel to one special alcoholic, George W. Today we're on step 9, make amends. Now, George W., your people have always been suggesting that John Kerry wasn't really a war hero. So let's look at the facts. One, John Kerry was in a war. Two, John Kerry won 3 Purple Hearts. 3, John Kerry still has shrapnel in his leg. Now let's look at you. 1, you were never in a war. You started a war. That's different. 2, you never won 3 Purple Hearts. A purple spotted liver, maybe. Again, totally different. 3, the only metal lodged in your body is the chip the far right implanted in your brain after inauguration. So I think you owe Kerry an apology. You made a mistake. It's okay. You're exactly where God wants you to be. Okay? Love you, man. One day at a time. Think, think, think. Keep the plug in the jug. Let go and let God. If you have 1 foot in yesterday and 1 foot in tomorrow, you're peeing on today. God bless. That's been Recovery Corner. Thank you. Now let's get back to the important stuff.
There you go.
Borzu Daragahi here. We'll take call from Fred in Montclair, New Jersey. Fred, what's on your mind?
Well, first let me tell you, thank God you're on the air.
Now, you're welcome.
Number two, I'd like to address something before that Sue mentioned. She asked how the Bush people could find some pleasure in the Woodward book. And I would just ask her to look back on Woodward's 3 previous books. He's made a career out of catering to who's in office. And I think that the message that the Republicans are taking from this and while they're putting it on their website is precisely that Bush was a leader, a firm person. And I think Woodward had that in mind. I sort of like conspiracy theories too.
Mm-hmm. I think you might be right with the book before this, the one that he wrote reporting on a number of weeks about the beginning of the war. I think that was a big suck up to George Bush. I think that he wrote that book and Bush came out of it looking like a strong leader, and that was his way of knowing that he could get back to him for this particular book. And I just happen to think if the Bush administration thinks that this book shows George Bush as a capable, intelligent leader, that they haven't read it.
The number is 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. Jerry in Atlanta, do you have a question for Borzu?
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good.
With all the casualty figures being released on American deaths in Iraq, one thing I've never heard is how many Iraqis have died over the last year, year and a half.
That's a great question. Yeah. Thanks for calling, Jerry.
Okay.
There's a really good website. It's antiwar.org, and they have a page that's all about casualties, and it includes American casualties, other coalition partner casualties, and various estimates on Iraqi casualties that run, I don't think, any higher than the civilian casualties run any higher than 10,000 at this point.
Of course, wow. I'm curious. There was a report, and it hasn't been confirmed yet, that 4 school children were killed by American troops, I guess overnight or early, actually yesterday. Inside Iraq. How difficult, as a reporter, how difficult is it to check out and verify that kind of information?
It is kind of difficult, but it is possible. You know, you go to the hospital, you go to the morgue, you can see the bodies for yourself.
Well, see, that's the interesting thing. The morgue of the hospital said that they had only gotten 2 bodies, and they were both adults. There were no bodies of any children, but yet there are still these reports from eyewitnesses that say that 4 children were killed.
In Iraq, that often happens, that people exaggerate or miscalculate the number of casualties. But I will say that is one of the most dangerous things about being in Iraq, is not the bombs or anything like that themselves, but just for civilians, for others, for contractors, is being in the heat of a firefight between Americans and others when the Americans are attacked.
Really?
Because it becomes out of control
and it turns
on you as a civilian?
It turns on the civilians, yes. That's happened numerous times.
Just chaos ensues. Because a lot of times the mercenaries, or the contractors, as they like to call them, and the troops, and I guess even the Iraqi police, are not all on the same page to begin with.
Yeah, and it's happened numerous times that the Americans, under attack, have opened fire on the Iraqi police. Because it's happened numerous
times.
It happened in Fallujah.
How would they not know the difference if those guys were in uniform?
I mean, in the thick of battle, in the heat of battle, you just open fire, I mean, that's what I've been led to understand.
Do you think that these type of battles, was there a tipping point when Iraqis went from liking the Americans for ousting Saddam to disliking the Americans for being there?
I mean, that is such a good, complicated question, but I think that there has been, in various communities, various tipping points at which they've decided that, look, yes, we're glad that Saddam is gone, but many things were better under Saddam than they are now.
For instance, some guy said traffic once. Who did we talk to? Who is that, the guy who has the blog?
Yeah.
He said, we asked him what was better under Saddam. He says, there wasn't as much traffic, man. I can't get anywhere.
Maybe it was also, I think one of the tipping points was the closure by the administration forces of the newspaper, so that any kind of criticism or, bottled up tensions, instead of being kind of channeled into print, were then out on the street. That seemed like a very dangerous thing to do.
And that was Al-Sadr's newspaper.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I never understood that decision. I mean, this guy was saying all this very, very incendiary stuff, but it wasn't that much more incendiary than some of the other publications.
I think he's the new breakout bad guy. I think that they're really setting him up we need a new bad guy. Osama's old news. Saddam's he's on meds and he's in prison. This is the breakout bad guy. This is a publicity push for the new bad man. And he's sort of different than the other ones. He's kind of chubby. He's very intense. He seems to be brooding. We've got Marvin in Dallas. Marvin, what's on your mind for Borzu? He's gone?
Marvin's gone.
All right. How about Lisa in Fort Drum?
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good morning. Oh, good. How are you guys doing?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. As a military spouse, my husband is presently stationed to Afghanistan. He's soon to come home in about a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I know as a spouse, Iraq is pretty much next on the list for him to go to. They tell us this at meetings that we go to. They, he's not even home yet, and they tell us, 9 months from now, be prepared for your husband to leave again. My theory with Iraq, I truly believe we're going to be there for years to come, not months, but many, many, many years. And knowing this, we have, my husband and I have decided to, when it's our time to get out, we're going to get out specifically for that reason. Could I just ask your guest, in his opinion, maybe what he thought, how long we would feasibly probably be there, what he thought?
Great. Thank you very much for your question, Lisa.
It's a very good question. You know, I'll tell one little story. One time I was, I had like a one day in bed with the military, and they took me out to this place called the Butler Range Complex, which is a, I mean, it was unbelievable. It was this huge training base and firing range for the American soldiers, very sophisticated, a lot of infrastructure.
And where was this?
This was in just east of Baghdad, about 40 miles. I don't think that the U.S. military would build something like that unless they were planning a training facility.
Right, right, right.
Unless they were planning to be there for the long haul. Every day you see trucks coming across the Turkish and Saudi borders with you know, mobile homes and all this infrastructure.
Wow. You mean they're setting up trailer parks?
Yes, absolutely. No, that's where a lot of the soldiers live. The you know, forward operating bases, the little bases around the country where the American soldiers are based, they now have internet cafes.
Any Bush campaign headquarters?
It's all Bush campaign headquarters.
Yeah, really.
You didn't quite answer the what was better under Saddam in terms of culturally and...
just security. I think that's the main thing. You know, people were like, yes, we lived in a terrifying fishbowl. At least, you know, we didn't have sharks, you know, except for Saddam.
I hear you. Robert, North Carolina. How are you, buddy?
Yes. My question is about all of these different military wings that answer to just different boutique causes. The U.S. military, the coalition answers to law and order and government, and the militants answer to tribes and their ideologies, and then you got the mercenaries, security contractors who answer to corporations and industrialists. I mean, how do you get rid of all of these things and replace them with a real-life police force? How long do you think that'll take?
Thanks for your question,
that's
Robert.
That's an interesting question.
We were talking about some of the confusion that comes from none of these people being really synced up because they all share different information and different I guess, channels on the radio.
And command structures.
Right, that's exactly what I was trying to say.
I think that this is a problem that came about following the early days of the defeat of the Ba'athist government. There was no plan in place. The U.S. Was with a minimum number of soldiers. They thought that they would go in there. They had no idea that everything, that every kind of civil structure would melt away. And you could see that in Iraq. I was there when that happened. And you could see all law and order dissipate, and it's never come back, essentially.
How could they not realize that when they fired all the police and they fired the army?
I mean, even before they were fired, they were gone. You know, I mean, there was no authority whatsoever. You know, maybe in the Kurdish north a little bit because you had the Kurdish government moving in quickly and establishing control in cities like Kirkuk, for example, and Tuz Hormatu. But other than that, you know, basically everything just kind of melted away, and the militias took over, and sometimes the army took over, sometimes you know other groups took over, the clerics took over, and that's basically how it happened, and it's never been resolved.
Wow.
I'm curious if we see the United States relaxing their ban on Ba'athists in terms of government office. Do you think that Ba'athists will actually stand for elections in 2005? Do you think there will actually be elections in 2005?
I think that there will probably be something resembling elections in the next year. You know, there has to be. There has to be some kind of legitimation of the current status quo there. I'm not sure. That's a really interesting question, whether the Ba'athists will come back. That's been a suggestion of some journalists and analysts in Iraq. Is like, you know, one thing that we could do to really fix up the situation here is...
let Saddam run?
No, but like allow the Ba'athist Party to reform. Call it the Ba'athist Party. You know, I mean and you know, give them a voice in the current government and the current system so that they're you know, that they're back. You know, I mean, it's the Ba'athist ideology is an Arab nationalist ideology. It had a lot of faults to it. You know, but you know, in terms of they were probably as against Al Qaeda and terrorism as the U.S. is.
But that's going to irritate the Shiites if they do that, though, right?
But you know, many of the Baathists themselves were Shiites.
Were Shiites. Okay. Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for being with us, Borzu Daragahi, a journalist who covers Iraq and Iran, usually from Iraq, here with us in the studio. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's really great.
All right, we appreciate it.
And I guess we'll be back, Riley. You want to take it?
Sure. Why not?
Do it.
All right. Coming up, a throwdown in Pennsylvania, the presidential daily briefing, courtesy of Mark Maron, and a true gadfly joins us in studio. All this and more when Air America Radio continues.
An OnStar Conversation, February 15th, 2004.
Oh! Okay, emergency, this is Valerie.
Oh, we need a ambulance.
Okay, I do have you on State Highway 146. Are there any injuries?
Yeah, a truck turned in front of another car and hit it, and it turned over right in front of us.
Okay, I will contact the police.
Okay.
Please.
Yes, this is Valerie with OnStar, and I'm reporting a vehicle crash with airbag deployment on Highway 146.
Okay, I'm going to send an ambulance.
Thank you.
Make sure you're never without the valuable assistance of OnStar.
Sir, the police do have the car, and the ambulance is on the way, okay?
Okay.
Would you like for me to remain on the line?
I'll see the police.
Okay.
Many Buick vehicles are among the 51 GM models available with OnStar. To learn more, visit your Buick dealer or Buick.com. OnStar. Always there. Always ready.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America, could tomorrow's primary results affect the presidential election? Plus, we're putting in new facts paper for today's liberal agenda. But first, here are the headlines at this hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The National Mall was brimming with demonstrators yesterday as protesters gathered in Washington to support abortion rights and voice their opposition to the Bush administration's policies on women's health. The March for Women's Lives was one of the biggest demonstrations in U.S. history. 1,400 organizations and marches from 57 countries participated. Organizers claimed a turnout of over 1 million. Local police said more than 750,000. Kate Michaelman, president of NARAL, pro-choice, told the crowd that President Bush is no friend of women.
We have never, ever before in our nation's history had a president whose attitudes toward women are more wrong-headed and more dangerous than those of our current president, George W. Bush.
On Friday, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry affirmed his pro-choice stance, saying women's rights are under assault by the Bush administration. Saudi Arabia secretly helped the U.S. during the Iraq War, much more than has been acknowledged. Senior officials from both countries told the Associated Press this weekend that the Saudi royal family permitted widespread military operations to be staged from inside the kingdom during the invasion of Iraq. Many Saudis opposed the war, and Osama bin Laden has used U.S. presence on Saudi soil to incite terrorism. The commission investigating the 9/11 attacks is expected to offer sharp criticism of the Pentagon's Domestic Air Defense Command in its final report. Some commission officials told the New York Times this weekend that they believe quicker military action might have prevented a hijacked passenger plane from crashing into the Pentagon. NORAD has acknowledged in the past that they had scrambled fighter jets faster. They might have intercepted the plane before it hit. And scores of protesters took to the streets of northern England over the weekend to protest the arrival of French far-right leader Jean-Marie Le Pen. Le Pen trekked to England to show his support for the white supremacist British National Party. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Joe Connison, best-selling author of Big Lies, says this about the new book, Take Them at Their Words, by Bruce J. Miller.
Take Them at Their Words is fun, frightening, and instructive. And in an election year, it should be required reading for every American who wants to take back our country from the far right.
Take Them at Their Words features more than 1,000 right-wing quotations from radio and TV programs, newspapers, magazines, and websites. Here are a couple of samples.
We need to execute people like John Walker in order to physically intimidate liberals by making them realize that they can be killed, too.
Ann Coulter.
Sarah Brady ought to be put down. A humane shot at a veterinarian would be an easy way to do it.
Talk show host Bob Mohan. Sidney Blumenthal says,
take them at their words is more than a brilliantly and endlessly amusing sample of quotations from the right. It is a volume that reveals an unabashed worldview that today holds sway in the White House, the Congress, and much of the media.
Take them at their words. Shocking, amusing, and baffling quotations from the GOP and their friends, 1994 to 2004. $15.95 in paperback at bookstores everywhere or online.
Conspiracy theorists unite. One upshot of the improved relations between the U.S. and Libya, more oil. The Wall Street Journal reports this morning President Bush's lifting of most trade sanctions on Libya will give American oil companies access to additional production after an 18-year absence. Federal government has given failing grades to all 50 states for their child welfare programs. A review conducted over the last 3 years found that no state fully complies with federal standards in protecting children. White House response is not more money for the programs, but less. The states now face tens of millions of dollars in penalties for failing to comply. And it was a pledge of support for the rebuilding of some of the world's most troubled regions over the weekend. Members of the group of seven major industrial countries have promised to fuel economic support for the rebuilding of war-torn Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestinian areas of the West Bank and Gaza. The pledge was contained in a joint statement that surfaced during a meeting of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank. Air America Radio News.
Planet check. During the midst of the war protests, two women in Berkeley, California took a stand.
It's about oil.
We looked around and just thought,
it's about greed.
It was insane that people are losing their lives for oil.
That's Sarah Hope Smith, part owner of Biofuel Oasis.
We have this totally renewable resource right here at home that people can make on their own and be self-empowered, and that's biodiesel.
A renewable fuel, biodiesel is made from used or new vegetable oil.
If you're using 100% biodiesel, which is called B100, then the harmful carbon dioxide emissions are reduced by 80%. The cancer risks are reduced by 90%. It's incredible the difference between driving a gasoline car.
Biofuel Oasis is a woman-owned business that values sustainability, local production, and community.
If you want to find out where you can find biodiesel around the country, you can go to biodieselnow.org.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to catmail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. Catmail.com, helping people and the planet.
Some mothers and daughters bond. Others are crazy glued. And now there's a new play about mothers and daughters that'll bring you to tears of laughter from door to door. The Daily News Raves from door to door is hilarious and deeply moving. It weaves the stories of three generations of Jewish women together with great artfulness. From door to door is a funny and heartfelt play that stirs up 65 years of family secrets and surprises.
Arlen Specter's liberal record on national security. He joined John Kerry in cutting the intelligence and defense budgets. Shockingly, Specter voted to...
It's beautifully performed, cheers the New York Post. And the Star Ledger applauds is like plunging into a bowl of your grandma's chicken noodle soup. See From Door to Door by James Sherman, directed by Joe Brancato at the West Side Theater. Call telecharge.com 212-239-6200. WOR's Joan Hamburg says you'll enjoy it from door to door.
We are ready for any unforeseen event which may or may not happen.
I recognize there are hurdles, and we're going to achieve those hurdles.
It will take time to restore chaos and order.
Some call those Bushisms, but we think it translates to George W., you're fired. He's the most powerful man in the free world and your elected leader, but it's time to show George W. exactly how you feel. George W., you're fired. That's right. Get your George W., you're fired t-shirt today and start spreading the word. High quality, 100% cotton, various designs, available in every size. It's time to get the word out and support the upcoming Democratic run to the White House. And what better way to show America your convictions than on the front of your chest? Visit www.wyourfired.com. That's www.wyourfired.com and order yours today.
Right.
Right now it's 7 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today we'll have today's marching orders for all you red-blooded liberals out there. Plus NASA says they're not in the business of reviewing movies, at least not
in
this movie. I like it. You know, some of these, I read some of these, and I like the way they're punctuated. That word, this, had two stars on each side, so I would go, this. Did it come off?
Brilliant.
So, thank you, Sue. Thank you for piping in there. Appreciate it.
We aim to please.
So you were at the march. I was going to say earlier that I went to the 1992 March on Washington for pro-choice, but I can't really wear it as some sort of badge of honor in the sense that because I'll be honest with you, the night before, I remember this pretty clearly. I was hanging out with my buddy Al, and we stayed up all night partying. And my buddy Dave Cross actually was going to pick us up with his girlfriend the next day in Washington Square Park. And we've been up all night, and he picks us up, and we immediately get into the car. We drove, it took us 8 hours to get to Washington. I was passed out in the car because there was so much traffic. I passed out in the back of the car. It was like this old station wagon. Then we got to the march, and literally they found a place to stand, and I just crashed on the ground for the entire march. I was just crashed on the ground, and eventually I'd come to, and there'd be women stepping over me, and I'd be like, what's going, where, oh yeah,
that's
no,
okay.
bad, whatever, and then I'd fall back to sleep.
You know? You could have had one of those billboards, you hung over men for abortion rights. That you count.
Yeah, no,
that
I
count.
I counted.
We need everybody we can get.
I counted. I just was not quite there the whole way. You know what I mean? I was a little lax.
Breaking night for choice.
That might be a great idea to have a group. You should start some organization like that, and they get a bus and they go down and they all just crash out and sleep on the sidewalk, but they're there for us. Those guys are really there for us.
Just regular guys who just don't
yeah,
have the
absolutely,
energy.
Absolutely, because I think this movement needs regular guys, and you could have found the way to get them.
I should have found a group of some kind. I've always had this fantasy that I would have my own group of some sort. I always
a cult.
Yeah, I just always felt like I had the charisma of a cult leader. I just lacked the vision. You know, you sort of need the vision.
Could you see him hold up in a bunker someplace?
You know, well, that's the thing. You don't want to be in front of all your followers in a bunker saying, so what do you guys want to do now?
It's not so much a vision thing, Mark, but you do actually, at the very least, need to stay awake.
That's true.
That helps.
True. You can't just leave. Where's the leader? Yeah, he's sleeping.
You know, this sounds like tomorrow's dream diary. I'll be
it's all coming together.
Oh, you could be the nap cult.
Yeah.
The nap cult. There's already a lot of following for that.
I would follow that, actually.
Do you nap in the afternoon?
In the mornings.
Are you napping now? Did I just wake you up?
Oh, wow. Now, before we go into the heavy news today, I have to say, I have a sports story.
Okay.
Oh, no. I will nap.
See, you have to go.
If it's
British,
an American sports story,
no.
I'm going to nap.
It's a British sports
story. I'll half nap.
My team, the Arsenal Gunners, clinched the Premiership Championship yesterday.
There are two people out there who care about that.
That's
Mark.
Right.
Is this curling?
No, it's football, man. No. Football.
You mean soccer?
Soccer.
Football, whatever you want to describe it.
How come Britons, whenever they, the British
soccer.
People, whenever they imitate Americans, are like, nasally.
Ah, yeah.
How are you?
And they roll the R's. But what are you going to do? They won. They tied their arch rivals, and in doing so, actually clinched the league championship.
Well, I'm happy.
Congratulations.
That's got us one more viewer, listener.
That's right.
Thank you very much,
I'm
Mark
happy
Riley.
I'm happy that you're happy, Mark.
Now, there
people
is a battle
about
royal.
Sports. I'm sorry. People get very excited about sports, and
yeah,
I'm going to let you have that, because my friend Frank Santarelli, who used to be on a TV show with me, when I told him I didn't like sports, he literally looked at me and said, well, then how do you feel alive?
He just said drugs?
Yeah. At that time, I probably did say drugs. But he was very earnest about it. He really couldn't understand how I could possibly feel alive and not like sports. And
I love sports.
I love them. I just don't like watching them.
Oh, I love to watch. I love to watch Arsenal play soccer. That's what I saw them in Highbury in London a few years ago, and I just watching them was absolutely wonderful.
Well, great.
But there is a battle, and this isn't a sports battle, that's shaping up tomorrow in the state of Pennsylvania. Incumbent U.S. Senator Arlen Specter, who many Americans may remember back in 1991 as being one of the lead questioners of Anita Hill during the Clarence Thomas.
The guy with the curly dyed hair.
Yeah. He's squaring off against conservative challenger Congressman Pat Toomey. 2 weeks ago, Specter had a 15% lead in the polls and plenty of money. The latest polling says the race is going to be very close, and Specter has spent a great deal over the last few days apparently trying to ensure that he wins. The race could have an impact on President Bush's reelection bid, which is why Bush went out of his way to endorse Spector at a fundraiser just last week.
Now, you're going to explain the dynamics of all this, right?
Sure. Al Gore narrowly won Pennsylvania four years ago. It was one of those states that people didn't think he was going to win, but he actually did, Pennsylvania and Michigan in particular. And it is at the top of the Republicans' capture list. The Republicans want Bush to
they
take
can taste this one. This is important.
They can taste it.
Yeah.
But see, they can't taste it if Toomey wins. Because then they figure Toomey is so conservative, that'll give the Democrat who's running against him, whose name I can't remember right now.
That'll wake the Democrats up, you mean, because they're going to see this weird little sort of hardline, ultra-right dude and go, uh-oh.
Well, this is funny, isn't it? It puts them in a really odd position of having to go support publicly the guy that they don't particularly want because he's too moderate for them, and he's being kind of critical of 9/11.
The Bush is supporting them, you mean?
Yeah, Inspector.
Right.
I mean, although they are somewhat tied, I think, a little bit to supporting the incumbent, unless the guy is, you know, is a crook who has done something completely outlandish, it looks very bad for the administration not to be backing the incumbent. But the other guy is presumably, he's anti-abortion, he's against taxes, he's much more the conservative wing that kind of Bush
he's
tends
very
to
anti,
go towards.
Anti-fun.
Anti-reason.
Well. Yes, anti-reason.
Anti-sense, in fact.
And the other senator, Rick Santorum, in Pennsylvania, is the same kind of conservative as Toomey.
Oh, he's a scary conservative.
Yeah. Santorum is, I mean, he's really, I mean, he doesn't want to hear a word about choice. He doesn't want to, I mean, he's just all the way in that.
Well, what does the world look like that these guys live in their minds? Do, you know what I mean? What does the ultra-right world look like? Do they think that everyone's going to be sort of happy or just sort of
fake
like
crew cuts,
repressed and hiding their misery? I don't know what the end
game
is.
I think they must live in their, I think they live in their cars.
It's going to be like the Eisenhower 50s kind of stuff? Or
I think that's what they want. I think that's what a lot of them honestly do. They want to go back to a simpler time. A time when
people
they
didn't question authority or engage in free speech.
A time when they thought that the government didn't play the same role that it does now, although they're kind of making that part up.
It did. It did, didn't it?
The government started playing a big role in the 30s with the New Deal, Social Security, all of those kinds of. And a lot of these people, by the way, want to roll all of that back. They really don't like the idea of the government funding Social Security. They'd rather have individual people decide for themselves where to put that money, that kind of thing.
They're like coming home after work and with their wives having cooked them dinner. That's who they are.
But you're saying that eventually they're going to have to, there's going to be questions like this in the meeting rooms of power. It's like, okay, so what are we going to do with the poor? How do we get rid of them?
Remember what the conversation that Newt Gingrich had, which was a public conversation, when he said that,
what if the poor don't die? What do we do then?
Remember, he said the best thing for orphans, well, just build up new orphanages. These people actually do, and for a long time, I'll be honest with you, I thought folks who said that were overreacting. I thought they were like Mark Maron conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
But, you know,
they
really are about changing fundamentally the way people live their lives.
And also making the government a spiritual institution.
Yeah.
There's that, too. I'm hoping that I read an article on alternate.com.
The thing that's scary is that Arlen Specter just said it's a dying breed.
Yeah.
It's a dying breed. The reasonable Republicans are dying out. They're like dinosaurs.
And if he loses, that means that moderate Republicans are going to right-wing their position.
We'll be back with the presidential daily briefing and many other topics of intrigue and discussion here on Air America.
Fascination.
Fascination.
There you go.
I don't know what we're going to do about Jason. He's head over heels in debt, and Jim refuses to bail him out again.
Well, he's a grown man with a good job. You've done your duty.
Yes, but Jim and I apparently fell down on the job when it came to educating him financially. He dreams of buying a condo, but he's only paying the minimum on his credit card.
Mm.
And he's at a stage where he won't appreciate advice from us. He needs someone he'll listen to. But who will give him good advice?
Maybe a financial planner?
How would we know he's getting someone who'll look at what he needs and not just sell him an investment or insurance plan? More bills he'll have trouble meeting.
Oh, you can really be assertive. I've been reading about this.
Uh-huh.
He can insist that the planner look at his whole financial situation and base recommendations on it. Then ask how the planner will be paid and what commissions or referral fees he'll get.
Oh.
For free information about choosing a planner and asserting your rights as a financial planning client, call Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards toll-free at 1-888-237-6275 or visit cfp.net.
Hi, I want to thank you for remembering to recycle, and I want to let you know the recycling program has been completely restored. Every week we're now collecting glass bottles and jars, along with plastic bottles and jugs, metal cans, aluminum foil, beverage cartons, and drink boxes. And don't forget to recycle your mixed paper and corrugated cardboard. Just set out recyclables in clear bags or your recycling containers. If you have any questions or need container decals, please call 311. Thanks for doing your part, New York.
Well, good morning, everybody. Will you parents please settle down so I can take the classroom attendance? Thank you. Okay, here we go. Brittany's mom and dad.
Present.
Present.
Justin's mom.
Present.
Lisa's dad. I said Lisa's dad. Well, maybe he's on his way. I hope he makes it. Lisa really needs his support. You know, your life can be hectic, but that's really no excuse. You have to get involved in your child's education. It will make a difference, believe me, whether it's checking homework or visiting with the teacher. Be present in your child's classroom. There's always a seat open with your name on it. Well, look who just showed up. Lisa's dad.
Yes, I made it. Present.
There are many ways to get involved in your child's school. Discover how. Call 1-800-281-1313. Or visit www.schoolsuccessinfo.org. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and Partners for Public Education, a partnership for the NAACP and People for the American Way Foundation.
Hey, how you doing? I'm Nick.
I'm Drew.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Jeff. And we're from 98 Degrees. And we're here for RAD, recording artists, athletes, and actors against drunk driving.
Now, we all make difficult choices each and every day.
Before you drink, make the right choice. Designated driver. Now, what should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Whatever you have to. Because when you drink and drive, we all lose.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Laura Flanders.
Let's transition and let's talk about another historical parallel to the situation we find ourselves in today. One of the things left for us to discuss here today is the parallels that many people are drawing to the situation in Vietnam. Is it a legitimate parallel? Does it work? Does it make sense?
Laura Flanders, Saturday night from 7 to 10 on Air America Radio.
Sabbath rules, man! Woo!
You're headbanging with Air America Radio now.
It's 20 past the hour, and we're playing Sabbath, man. Now, where did that come from? It's now time. By the way, I'm Mark Maron. I'm with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott this morning on Monday. Good morning to you. It's time to reveal the top secret contents of the intelligence community's presidential daily briefing for Monday, April 26th. Now, you realize that what this is. It's the PDB, okay? Now, this morning's PDB, today's PDB from the intelligence community is entitled Large Groups of Women Determined to Vote Within U.S. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that hundreds of thousands of women gathered in Washington, D.C. yesterday, indicating that they had left their nurseries and kitchens unattended. Regrettably, intelligence was unable to determine the exact purpose of the gathering because we had no agents able to infiltrate their ranks. We can speculate that this large assemblage of women may have had something to do with the highly anticipated baseball series between the Baltimore Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays, which took place this weekend. This sort of ad hoc mobilization of women for purposes other than shopping could prove to be an imminent threat not only to the economy, but also to your campaign and to the continued vitality of the canning and quilting industries. This department recommends repealing the 19th Amendment and, for good measure, the first as well. Respectfully, Department of Homeland Security. That was the PDB for today. Powerful stuff.
Does it give a cupcake with that?
Yeah, I'm sure that he gets a cupcake or maybe a toy. Where he gets to play with the, you know, one of the little things on his desk.
Spinning top?
Yeah, so are we doing, are we going to talk about NASA or are we going to talk about Cheney?
No, we're going to talk about Cheney. All right. Let's talk about Cheney. Let's go back to early 2001 when Dick Cheney was the man who convened this energy task force to determine
the super secret energy task force.
That's
with,
the one.
The head of Enron and Schwarzenegger and Michael Milken.
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you ever wonder which private citizens, other than the ones you just mentioned, representing which interests actually did the hobnobbing with Dick Cheney during that time?
I lose sleep over it, Mark.
You lose sleep over it?
I'm like, who are those guys?
I imagine they're all kind of horribly connected in a very compromised way to the energy industry.
Could be. The Supreme Court is shortly going to decide, actually I think they start deliberations tomorrow, whether or not we'll get to know which privates, because the Bush administration has kind of put up this whole cone of silence thing. Mm-hmm. You remember, because we just were listening to Get Smart Music, you remember the cone of silence?
I do, kind
of. Well, he's put a cone of silence around the Energy Task Force and essentially said, hey, we're not telling you who was part of this.
The reason for that is that if it is revealed, then we will probably be able to make sort of connections to the deregulation of the California energy industry and the sort of global deregulation people and people that were, you know, set up to benefit personally and for their corporation through this.
Ka-ching.
Right.
I'd say it's a silo of silence. I'm thinking giant cone. Cone is too much like traffic cone. It's way too small.
Well, the administration in this case is appealing a judicial order that allowed a limited inquiry into who gave Cheney advice back in 2001. The Bush position is similar to the one that they've taken on enemy combatants. That is, I'm the president. I'll do what I want.
Well, you know what's really revealing right there? Is that right there it says, gave Cheney advice, like that happens.
Yeah, right?
Like anybody gives that guy advice, shut up, I'm working.
Well, that's the whole point, because our vice president has taken on an awful lot of the trappings of the presidency. And here's a profile of America's alleged number two.
In a career of over 30 years in Washington, Dick Cheney has never forgotten that, ultimately, he works for the people who run the energy companies. And Dick is one of the people who run the energy companies. But his single-minded devotion to his people has taken its toll on Dick Cheney. He had 3 heart attacks before he was 50. A lesser man might have been tempted to reassess his priorities, but he was able to look death in the eye and say, must make money. When some within the Bush White House wanted to invade Iraq out of pure revenge, Dick was the voice of reason, calmly pointing out the blood of U.S. servicemen should only be shed for pure profit motives. Whether in the public eye or serving from an undisclosed location, Dick Cheney remains a man of the people who run the energy companies.
All right, Dick Cheney.
What a great PSA that was.
By the way, his good buddy, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, still will not recuse himself from hearing this case, which is, again, going to be coming up tomorrow. But he does say that it may have been a mistake.
It's amazing that he had to go and do it to think that it might have been a mistake. But he didn't figure that out before.
Can a guy have friends? He's my friend. We shoot things together. We talk on the phone. Leave me alone. Dick's my friend. You can all shut up. Maybe I shouldn't have gone with the duck thing.
It is a kind of Washington clubby thing, though, isn't it?
Duck hunting?
No. It's just hanging out, powerful people hanging out with powerful people.
Oh, yeah.
You ever sat in the bushes waiting for ducks? Had some good times with me and Dick are hanging out in the bushes waiting for ducks, me and Dick. There's a duck, Dick, I said.
You know, I keep thinking of the Elmer Fudd hat, you know, sitting in that in the marsh waiting for Daffy.
Oh, boy.
So, Mark, you've got a story.
I've got many. You want to hear the one about when I was 14 in the back of that car?
No, not that one.
We heard that one.
You did?
Yeah.
Really? Am I talking to my... Okay. So this is interesting. NASA, I was accused of saying Nassau yesterday because sometimes I don't know. I don't talk right. NASA has said that it's been forbidden by the administration to offer any comments when asked about the new movie, The Day After Tomorrow. This is a $125 million disaster film. It's going to open up in May 28th. And it's based on, accumulating smokestack and tailpipe gases, all of a sudden causing an ice age. Like, literally, almost overnight. Bam! Everything freezes up.
Wow.
And I guess the administration is a little scared. You have the trailer for this? Let's hear it, Chris.
Vice President, if we don't act now, it's going to be too late.
I'm afraid that time has come and gone, my friend.
What can we do?
Say as many as you can.
It's a cameo by Dick Cheney.
Yeah, really.
That's amazing.
He didn't make enough from Halliburton. He's now getting paid by the movie business.
Well, I don't know. Whatever those drumming sound effects were, I now need to see that movie.
I think that was Condi coming through the door.
It pounded that ad into my head.
Yeah, really.
Didn't you feel your heart kind of jump when that noise happened? They've really perfected that stuff.
That's just a button on a piano.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Touchy, touchy. Nope. Do you think they told the Environmental Protection Agency not to answer questions about Blade Runner? I mean, no, it's all a bit.
Well,
no,
I think this is more specific because I think that the environment is a real issue and people are really afraid of global warming. And this is 125 million dollars spent by this movie making company to put that issue right in front of people. So they're assuming that this will spur people to go, hey, could this happen, man? And they've instructed NASA to say, don't know, not our department. Maybe you could call somebody else, not us.
That's a little conspiracy tendency coming out there. You think that the movie business made this to draw attention to the environment. I think they just made it to make millions of dollars.
Well, maybe that's true, but I would imagine it would be an interesting sort of thing to, and not necessarily a conspiracy, but we would be able to find out if we just contacted the director, perhaps the writer, and said, well, how do you really feel about the environment? And I'm sure by the nature of it.
You're going to make me a lot of money, man.
I don't know. I think that people, maybe they want to make money. Obviously, they do. They spend a lot of money on this, but who knows? Maybe he's on our team.
125.
Why not assume that? Why not assume that by scaring the hell out of America with the possibility of dangerous gases emitting into the atmosphere that will automatically just freeze everyone's butt, you know, like overnight, and no one can do anything because everything's frozen, might be a political statement.
Oh!
Because they all saw Black Hawk Down and then still think that Bush is doing a great job.
Something
I don't think that these things
in my
ever
head.
Have a knock-on effect from the movies.
Yeah, do that again, Chris. Oh, no, vote for Bush.
Yeah, now I know. Dick Cheney without Beano or something.
That
my
was a
God.
Direct hit on Mark Maron. Do it again, Chris.
I
got it.
Oh, my God, I got to go to the bathroom.
Get him some Kevlar.
Wow.
Now I understand how ads work.
I like that, Chris. Do it.
I understand how ads work. Yeah. But I think this is kind of interesting that they're shutting that, you know, they're trying to tell to NASA to shut up because they know that this is going to make people freak out. And the honest to God truth is that Bush is not good on the environment. He's deregulating everything. He's making accommodations for corporations to pollute more, saying they're going to clean up when they're not. And I think this could possibly make people start having a conversation about it publicly. And he's shutting NASA up.
And Mark Maron is not the only conspiracy theorist in the world.
It's not a conspiracy, really. Sometimes I can feel the hole in the ozone, Mark.
What about those poor kids that called up after that cartoon Ice Age came up? They ignored them, too? That's so mean.
That's right. You're right. You're right.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Up next, author and gadfly Paul Waldman joins us in the studio, and Mark Maron's got the liberal agenda. But first, news headlines on the half hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Thousands of women from all walks of life made their way to the Washington National Mall yesterday to show their support for women's right to choose and to protest the Bush administration's policies on women's health. The protesters vowed that Bush will not win a second term, and they intend to make their voices heard in November. Late polls going into Tuesday's primary in Pennsylvania show Republican Senator Arlen Specter is ahead virtually by the skin of his teeth in a hot contest with rival conservative Republican Congressman Patrick Toomey. Some political pundits see the race as the second most important election of the year. Specter, considered one of the last moderate Republicans, has the support of the president. Iraq was seen of more violence this morning after a powerful explosion inside an old perfume factory leveled the building and destroyed four U.S. Humvees. 10 Americans were taken away by ambulance. Several Iraqis were also wounded in the attack. And first to 20, now the 50. More of the nation's greenbacks are going Technicolor. The makeover of the $50 bill is being unveiled today. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down. But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd president of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax Bush once and for all.
With Mark Maron and Sue Ellicott, I'm Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. And we're pleased to have with us in our studio, author Paul Waldman. He's the author of Fraud, The Strategy Behind the Bush Lies and Why the Media Didn't Tell You. He's also the creator and editor of The Gadflyer, an internet magazine about politics. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Morning. It's good to be here.
Right off the top, it seems as though the Bush administration, in many instances, is flexible about the kinds of positions it takes. For example, the whole idea, we're giving over power on June 30th, and then we see a little backtracking away from that. They purged the Ba'athists in Iraq, and then he kind of backs away and says, okay, you know, they can come in. Is this just being flexible? Is he a waffler? How does this play out?
Well, I think when it comes to Iraq, they basically don't have a clue what they're doing. I mean, they were so... when they started this off, they had all of these kind of incredibly optimistic ideas. You know, we were just going to go in and they would welcome us with flowers and candy, and everything would go perfectly. And the irony of this is that they had a group at the State Department that they assembled of Iraqi exiles and people who had lived there who put together a very detailed plan that predicted perfectly everything that was going to happen. They said there was going to be looting, there were going to be trouble providing utility services to people, and the Pentagon, who was running things, they said, well, you know, no thanks, everything will be fine. We don't have to worry about all that. And now they're feverishly trying to figure out where they should go from here, so they keep changing their mind about what's going to happen. And, you know, we're coming up in a few weeks on this deadline, and who knows who they're going to hand power over to.
Mm-hmm. Your book says that the American people were essentially sold a bill of goods about George W. Bush and who he was 4 years ago. How did they pull that off?
Well, they pulled it off because they're very good at politics. I mean, one thing we've seen is that they're not very good at policy. They don't have a lot of successes they can point to either here or abroad, but they are very skilled at politics, and so they knew they had a problem with George W. Bush because he comes from the heart of the American elite. I mean, if you think about all the advantages that he had over the course of his life and the opportunities that were opened for him, you know, you could probably count on one hand the number of Americans who had that those kinds of gifts given to them.
But he's sort of like the simple son of the America's elite. He's sort of the Rubish one, right?
Right, and his whole life is the story of people, you know, phone calls being made to get him out of trouble, you know, people giving him their money to lose. And so what they did was they said, well, we have to replace that with something else. And what we're going to do is we're going to replace it with this idea of the cowboy.
Says, and Jesus, right? Jesus and the cowboy?
Well, I guess Jesus on horseback.
Yeah, there you go.
Cowboy and Jesus, yeah.
So, you know, right before he ran for president, he bought a ranch. You know, when he goes back there, he puts on the cowboy hat and the boots and the big belt buckle and he goes out and clears brush. There seems to be a lot of brush on this ranch. I don't know where it all comes from. And, you know, he looks good in the outfit. There's no doubt about that. And people say, oh, yeah, he's just a regular guy just like us. But, of course, there's nothing ordinary about George W. Bush. That was an image that they've worked very carefully to cultivate. And this is actually, I think, why a lot of liberals make a mistake by making fun of him for tripping over his words. It's okay to make fun of him. There's a lot of material there. There's no doubt about it. But when we make fun of him for being stupid, it actually serves his purposes. Because
really? We look like the bullies.
Yeah, it makes liberals look like snobs. And it reinforces this idea that he's not part of the elite, that he's actually looked down upon by the elite. And what Republicans need to do in order to be successful is to tell people, don't pay attention
to the people who really have the money and the power, because, of course, those are conservatives, worry about this intellectual elite. Worry about Hollywood actors. You know, if you can get people angry about, you know, something that Susan Sarandon said about Iraq, then you don't have to talk about the way that, for instance, you know, Republicans in Congress are selling you out on a daily basis. So when you make fun of him for being stupid, it kind of reinforces the idea that he's just a regular guy. He may not be too smart or too eloquent, but, you know, he's an ordinary fella. And
what can you criticize him about? I mean, you know, because, like, I mean, that press conference was ridiculous. I mean, my hate was interrupted by my pity. I mean, if you can't criticize him for being incapable of you know, communicating on more than one level, what can we hit him with?
Oh, no, I think you have to make a distinction that you know, he's not intellectually curious. He doesn't know a lot. He doesn't ask the right questions, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the same thing as being dumb. I mean, he's actually a very shrewd politician. He may be an ignoramus, but he's not stupid. Okay. So now that's a subtle distinction to make to people. But I think just making fun of him for being dumb is not enough.
But not dumb, but just like you were saying. I mean, you know, ignorant and not interested or really interesting. You know, I mean, the fascinating thing about this guy seems to me, on top of, like, the image of the cowboy, was that, you know, his religious conversion, and that also appeals to a great deal of people. And also the fact that I don't know why stuff doesn't stick to this guy. You know, after all this time, you know, why doesn't stuff, you know, now his polls are coming up. Why doesn't it stick to him?
I don't know. I think it's partly that he sees something about the presidency that we don't, and that he's just a figurehead. And I think that he can play on the American people that he's just a figurehead, and there are lots of other competent people in all the branches of government who are doing stuff for him. And I do think he thinks he's like the Queen.
Oh, not only that. I mean, he seems to believe that God has sent him out on this mission and is whispering in his ear. But what he and his people understand, I think, is that most people don't pay a lot of attention to the details of politics. So if they can put out an image that kind of goes over the broad contours of what people see, then they can be successful. So I'll give you a for instance. If you go to the Bush website, georgewbush.com, mm-hmm. you can see all these photo albums. Now, if you look at the Compassion photo album, what is that? It's 24 pictures of George W. Bush with blacks and Hispanics. Now, there's nothing compassionate about his actual policies, but if you put up a lot of pictures of him where he's hugging black people, then it makes him look like he's a compassionate guy. That's what people see. Or another example, there's the National Security photo album, which is him, a bunch of pictures of him in army jackets and with soldiers. Now, you get the impression that a lot of people feel that George W. Bush is a friend to the man and woman in uniform. Why do we think that? It's because we see all these pictures of him with all these soldiers.
I was saying this about putting the book on there, the Woodward's book on the campaign website, that people will see it and just go, oh, it's a pro-Bush book.
Yeah, so they know people aren't going to read it,
exactly.
but they can control the spin if they say that it's good for them.
That's what I was saying.
So, in fact, you know, he's not really a friend of the man and woman in uniform. You know, forget about the Guard members and Reserve members who are on these endless rotations. You know, he's cut funding for the schools that serve military bases. He's cut veterans' benefits, tried to cut combat pay. All these things would give you a very different view of what he thinks, but that's the reality. That's not the image.
So why don't we see Democrats, and particularly Kerry, coming up with exactly what you've just said, showing a picture of Bush with some other pictures on the website with Latinos and blacks saying, you know, compassion, and essentially kind of poking fun at it by running the facts and the lack of funding and the lack of real compassion.
Doing a satire underneath. Of the Bush site?
No, just telling the truth.
Right.
Well, I think that would be a great idea.
But
Kerry campaign is being very careful. They don't want to mess this up. They know it's close. They can see the power off there on the horizon. And that kind of caution is one of the great enemies of a successful campaign. We'll see. You know, one thing that if you look back at John Kerry's career, what you see is that he often starts slow in a campaign. He gets in trouble, and that's when he really does his best campaigning and turns it on at the end when his back is to the wall.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, we'll see.
How aware is Bush of these manipulations? How scheming is he as an individual in your eyes? I mean, does he sit there and know that all this stuff is being done in his name, that he's being used this way?
Oh, I think so. He's a smart politician. You know, he often says, as most politicians do, oh, I don't read polls. I don't really care about that stuff. In fact, that's not true. He apparently is obsessed with polls. He's always going over poll numbers, talking to political consultants about what one poll says and what another poll says. So he's actively involved in his campaign.
We believe.
We'll finish it up when we come back.
Well, no, let's take the break and come back.
All right, so we'll be right back with Paul Waldman, who's going to stay with us. We're going to have the liberal agenda, and we want to know who you think is the real What is that? We want to know who you think the real President Bush is. What is that? What are you making me
who's
read?
Who's the real President Bush?
Well, okay, I get it. Call us at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270 with questions for Paul Waldman right here on Air America.
Air America Radio.
I don't want conventional programming on this network. I want counterculture. I want anti-establishment.
Because we couldn't hold it a minute longer.
Welcome to the Hot House Cafe. What can I get you?
Hello, Flo.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Wildfire. You're looking incendiary today. What can I get you, sweet pea?
Let's see. I'm so hungry I could consume a neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
I think I'll start with the toasted woodshake shingle sandwich.
All righty. Super salad, baby doll.
The backyard dry brush salad looks delicious. I'll have that.
Okie dokie, with or without succulents?
Without. You know I can't stand water-retaining plants.
Oh, that's right.
And for dessert, I'd like an old gazebo sundae, sprinkled with irreplaceable photos and family heirlooms.
Anything to drink, baby?
Lawnmower gasoline. Unless you have some carelessly stored paint thinner.
I think we just might.
Goodie.
Knowing what Wildfire likes to eat is half the battle. Visit firewise.org to find out how you can help make your home more defensible against wildfires. That's firewise.org, a public service brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Dear Calvary Hospital, my husband John was 56 when he was diagnosed with brain cancer. After 2 long years of unanswered wishes and vanished dreams, John was now at the end of his life. We had no idea of how to handle the process of dying. We were terrified and distraught until we went to Calvary Hospital. When John entered Calvary, it was only a matter of days before we saw the difference. Your expert doctors, nurses, technicians, your entire staff gave us the attention we had never had. Medically, emotionally, and spiritually, you taught us how to handle John's death. We weren't afraid anymore. In the last few weeks of John's life, he lived. Yours truly, Lori Hathorn.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Insurance companies do not have the right to deny you Calvary's expert care. In fact, it's the law. So don't be denied. Call us at 718-518-2000 or visit calvaryhospital.org.
Honey, you've been at that desk for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Take a break. Let's go out and look for the baby furniture.
Not right now, Jackie. I'm still trying to figure out how we'll do without your paycheck.
Oh, I'm only taking a 3-month leave.
But then there'll be daycare.
We probably ought to have more insurance, too. And start saving for college.
Right now, I wish when I was in college, I'd majored in financial planning instead of engineering.
We could go to someone with financial planning expertise.
Yeah, but how would we know we're getting someone who'd look at all our needs, not just try to sell us an investment plan?
If you find you need the help of a financial planner but are not sure how to find one who is competent, ethical, and will develop a plan based on your needs, you can get help from Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, a nonprofit certifying agency. For a free brochure, 10 questions to ask when choosing a financial planner, call toll-free 1-888-CFP-MARK. CFP is in Certified Financial Planner and MARK. Or visit CFP.net.
So what else is news?
We like to look at what's been left behind out of the day's news.
Air America's Marty Kaplan.
In particular, looking at the impact not of the American military, but of what comes along with the American military. We are not just soldiers there. We are another massive presence. Some might call them mercenaries.
Marty Kaplan, evening 7 to 8 on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott, Mark Riley, and Paul Waldman, our guest, who wrote the book Fraud, The Strategy Behind the Bush Lies and Why the Media Didn't Tell You. I just had to read that from a slant. We want to know who you think the real President Bush is and have any questions for Paul. We're taking your calls here at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. I want to take this call from Sarah because I think she called earlier as well. Sarah, are you there?
Right. At that time, I think I
I read you the one sentence about this group called, well, the group is called the New Messiahs. And they believe in Machiavellianism. And Machiavellianism is nothing but a political doctrine which denies the relevance of morality in political affairs and holds that craft and deceit are justified in pursuing and maintaining political power.
Absolutely. That's now, exactly what these guys are. Do you have a question for Paul?
Well, not so much a question, just to tell you that Antonin Scalia, Michael Ledeen, John Ashcroft, Tom DeLay, Charles Colson,
yes.
and what's his name, Karl Rove,
right.
are all parts of this group. And
they're
the people who are brainwashing him and getting him to do, you know, he's their Charlie McCarthy.
That's right. That's a very astute observation. Thank you, Sarah. He's their puppet. And you'd agree with that, right, Paul?
No, actually, I wouldn't. I don't think that Bush and his advisors are sitting in the Oval Office, rubbing their hands together, going, "Wah ha 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 ha! Our evil plan is now coming to fruition." No, I think he thinks that he's doing the right thing as he sees it. But he also has decided at many points along the way that in order to do that, he's going to have to lie to us.
What about Cheney, though? Come on, that guy's evil.
You think he does rub his hands together and go, "Wah, ha, ha, ha."
That's the point that you make about the lying. So your book is about why the media didn't tell you about the lies. What are the biggest lies that he's told, and why is the media not catching them and doing a better job and pointing them out?
Well, you know, Bush has told a lot of lies, but most of them are not, the individual statements themselves are not so shocking and amazing, but it's how you put it together. The difference between him and his predecessors is that, you know, we can remember these big lies that, that other presidents told, you know, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman," or, you know, "We did not trade arms for hostages, I'm not a crook." With Bush, it's a lot of little lies that add up to a series of big lies.
The cumulative big lie effect.
Right, so you can rattle off a whole list of things he said about Iraq that weren't true. They added up to this idea that if we didn't go and attack them, they were going to attack us with their huge arsenal of weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
He's.
I just did a Frankenstein.
And your lips didn't move when you did that. That was very impressive. So he told a whole series of falsehoods about his tax plans that add up to the idea that he's trying to cut taxes for regular people. So it's each individual statement may seem relatively minor when you look at it in isolation, but when you put it all together, it's to establish a real false impression.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Carlos in Brooklyn. Carlos, my friend, what's up?
Yeah, this is about the best, most nuanced portrait of Bush I think I've heard. I want to congratulate the author. Bush, to me, is a master of deception. That there's so much image there, whatever substance is underneath it, is actually at odds with the image. I wonder if Mr. Weldman has any more information about Bush's going to prep schools. And secondly, even he calls it a ranch. I understand a ranch to be where there's livestock.
Yeah,
there.
Right.
There's no livestock there, is there?
It's a tumbleweed ranch. It's a Bush ranch.
Yeah. Well, you know, the prep schools is an interesting thing. His whole career, he's tried hard to distance himself from this image that his father had. You know, you may remember that his father said at one point, "You know, I like to eat pork rinds," and that was supposed to show you that he was really a regular fella. Bush, not just
stupid.
for George W. Bush, it's also an act. It's just a much more convincing act.
Yeah.
And so when people would ask him when he first came into politics, "What's the difference between you and your father?" He would say, "Oh, well, you know, he went to a fancy prep school, but I went to San Jacinto Junior High." Well, you know, he went there for a year, and then he went to a fancy private school in Houston, and then he went to Andover and Yale.
He did
Harvard.
Grow up a lot, though, in Texas, didn't he? I mean, he was in Texas from when he was a kid.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, he summered at the estate in Kennebunkport. And, you know, obviously, this was not a regular upbringing for George W. Bush.
Let's take Jim in Omaha. Jim, how are you?
Fine. How are you guys?
Good, man. You got a question for Paul? Or a statement?
Oh, yes, I do. Paul, I was wondering, do you think that this Woodward book that came out was too easy for him to, I mean... I don't trust them as far as I can throw them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that the stuff that comes out, there's more people are looking at it, even though it's on his website, on our website, you know, that there's just so much there that says more positive about him.
And
you know,
do
you think that Woodward's got taken, and we're getting taken?
Well,
You mean duped. Okay, I get what he's saying.
Well,
thanks, Jim.
It's a good point, actually, because some of these conversations you read that Woodward relates, it's obvious that he's being spun, too. When Bob Woodward comes in the White House and does interviews with people, he's going to get some interesting facts, but he's also going to get some spin. Like, there's at one point, and I don't know where, Woodward doesn't tell you how he reconstructs these conversations, but at one point he talks about how Bush supposedly tells people to, don't push the case on Iraq too far beyond the facts. And that, of course, is the whole notion that he would have told anybody that is absurd because they were doing nothing but pushing it beyond the fact.
I got an email that addresses this from the West Coast. If Bush had come out against the Woodward book, people would flock to it to get the juicy dish. By putting it on their website, they diffuse any potential controversy because people will assume the book is a boring regurgitation of stuff they've heard. Then she says, the show is great. I got up at 3 a.m. my time to listen for a bit. And damn it anyway, I'm too interested to go back to sleep. Does TiVo work for radio?
I don't know. The thing about that book is that he is probably the most recognized journalist in the United States. And that I think that people are still reading that book. I saw people reading it this weekend, people I stayed with.
You said you saw people buying it.
No, but the people I was staying with, my friends I was staying with in Maryland, they were reading it. They were about two-thirds of the way through.
No, sure. Even if it sells a million copies, which is huge for a book, well, there's another 279 million people in America who won't read it. So,
Paul, I got a question about Karl Rove, because if Dick Cheney is not oil can Harry rubbing his hands, a lot of people think, certainly people who follow politics, that Karl Rove is the one that has really shaped George W. Bush's political fortunes. True?
To a certain extent. And again, I think it's not that Bush isn't a partner in this, but Rove is a very smart operator, and he has been with Bush from the beginning. And so you can sort of look back at the whole evolution of how the persona of George W. Bush was constructed, what kind of strategies they employed, and he has his hand in everything. One of the differences between some previous administrations, for instance, James Carville was the sort of the closest analog to Rove in Bill Clinton's campaign, but he didn't go to the White House and make policy because he's a political consultant. But Rove has his hand in almost everything that this administration does, which, if you think that political consultants shouldn't do that sort of thing, may be a little troubling to people.
He's just very, very good at his job. He's great at his job.
Oh, absolutely. But, he's not people see him as the sort of evil genius. He may or may not be evil. I'm going to get audited by the IRS for saying that.
Don't be afraid. He is evil. He's evil.
We all are. We're not worried.
but he's not necessarily a genius. He's made some big mistakes in the past. For instance, right near the end of the 2000 campaign, they decided to spend a bunch of money in California, which was a waste. So he's not infallible, and he'll probably make some mistakes in this campaign, too.
We're talking. Is too soft? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
We're talking to Paul Weldman. Weldman, I'm sorry.
Plug his book.
Fraud, the strategy behind the Bush lies and why the media didn't tell you.
Okay,
that was Mark Maron doing it in an English accent. It's amazing, Mark. Well done.
I'm just working on my
Fantastic.
Two impressions.
That's
pretty
really good.
Good.
He worked on that for the weekend. Man, that's great.
It was just to impress you, Sue.
I'm impressed. Okay. Sorry, Paul. I was just wondering, do you think that the media is actually too soft on Bush?
Absolutely. He's got.
And why?
The reasons are extremely complicated. I think that you can look back at different periods and they managed to manipulate them in different ways for different reasons at different times. And so during the campaign, he was really good at going back to the back of the plane, giving everybody a nickname. And Bush is a personable guy. There's no doubt about it.
Everyone gets a nickname, right? That was the funniest part
That's
of
all
that,
it takes.
That
they're
book
all
about Paul O'Neill. Hey, Pablo! It's hilarious.
They're all really just wowed by being given a nickname?
Well, they liked him. And that and they end up, if they like you, they end up giving you the benefit of the doubt, which they never gave to Al Gore. Once they got into the White House, they undertook the strategy of intimidation, where if you're a White House reporter and you write something that's too critical, you're going to get shut out and blacklisted, and the reporters know this. And then, after 9/11 happened, the press just completely laid down and said, well, we're not going to question anymore. We're just going to, offer these great huzzas to our great and wonderful leader. And then the same, very similar thing happened as we did the run-up to the Iraq War, where, they didn't want to rock the boat. This is the way the country was moving. They know that they're going to get accused of being unpatriotic if they're too critical. And so time and time again, they've kind of laid down. The other problem is that reporters are under this constant pressure from the right accusing them of liberal bias. Mm-hmm. And so they know that if they're too critical, they're going to get inundated with these accusations that they're not being objective, they're not doing their job, they're unprofessional. And as a consequence, they bend over backwards to show how objective they are by being tougher on Democrats.
We have Tess in the Yonkers. Tess, how are you?
Hi, good morning. I love your show.
Thank you.
I want to know why John Kerry and the Democrats in general have not forcefully criticized the policies of this administration. For instance, yesterday, Kevin Hughes was on one of these shows, and he said something about John Kerry, and somebody from John Kerry's campaign said that that is irresponsible. What I expect from them is to ask the question, where was George W. Bush? Where was Dick Cheney, Trent Lott, all those people?
Yeah,
John Kerry was being shot at.
That's a good question, Tess. That kind of turned into a rant, but we appreciate the call.
And you know, it's something that Kerry certainly doesn't hesitate to bring up his Vietnam service. Could he put it in a more kind of a stronger way? Sure. And it's an interesting fact that all of these hawks who are so willing to send American men and women to fight and die, nobody in the entire Republican leadership of this generation served in Vietnam. Every single one of them. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to have gone to Vietnam to be able to make policy and be a legitimate voice. But if you can go down the list, Bush, Cheney, Rove, people like Trent Lott, Rush Limbaugh, none of them actually served. Every one of them got out. And, yeah, could Kerry put it stronger? Sure. He could turn to George W. Bush and say, listen, you know, while you were tooling around Houston with your drinking buddies, I was crawling through the muck in Vietnam winning medals in service to my country.
I wish he would do that.
Well,
thank you very much,
strong.
Paul Waldman, the author of Fraud, the strategy behind the Bush lies and why the media didn't tell you. Right now, that's our facts from the Streisand compound with our liberal agenda for today. Get your notebooks out and your pens. Here are your marching orders, liberal. One, lobby school board to ensure that milk program is dolphin safe. Two, block entrance to Army recruiting office. Offer makeovers instead. Three, throw stuff at a McDonald's or a Walmart. That's kind of general. Four, wherever possible, side with terrorists. For example, blame Bush administration for the mess in Iraq. Five, take over PTA. Make schools rewrite history books to let the Indians win a few more battles. Six, support homoerotic violence in video games, but protest the Passion of Christ. Seven, organize a neighborhood recycling / wife swapping program. And eight, teach children how to fool a drug test. Those are the orders for today, so make note of those and go out into the world and do what you got
to
do.
Even with my throwing skills, I'm happy to hit a Walmart. They're so big.
Oh, my goodness.
Mr. Bean, he's got to go for a Walmart.
I got a quick email before we go. I just have to say I have lost a lot of respect for this show. How could any show of quality have a person who supports Arsenal on it?
That must be from a Spurs fan.
Right? Join us tomorrow when we have the funniest Iranian comedy, the comedian that is you have ever heard. That's tomorrow's Morning's Edition. Here on Air America Radio.
My girl's not a gold digger, but man, it's tough. It's like I need six figures to keep her love. Moving flowers, eventually a ring. Who said love don't cost a thing, yeah.
Love may not be free, but you can get a whole lot of it for only $1 each on McDonald's Dollar Menu. Eight tasty choices like a meaty double cheeseburger, fries, or two apple pies, and a whole lot more to love.
The weight of my heart is through my stomach. McDonald's, I'm loving it.
Prices and participation may vary.
Maybe you can drive my car, and maybe I love you.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm Nick Cannon.
We're rad.
What's up? I'm Beyonce.
Hey, I'm Kelly.
Hello, I'm Michelle.
And we're Destiny's Child.
What's up, y'all? It's Eve.
Hey, this is Meredith Edwards, the rad, and I'm here to remind you that friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council. Yeah!
You're listening to 1190 WLIP New York, the home of Air America Radio.
Hey, this is Rachel from Unfiltered on Air America Radio, where we promise you news and opinions you will not hear anywhere else, including on the rest of the network. It's unfiltered at airamericaradio.com. That's our email address. We always love to hear from you. I'll be back in just a second with Chuck.